This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning and welcome to the Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca on a lovely Tuesday morning. Supposed to be very nice out, mid-20s, summer. It's middle of July and lots to talk about. Jim Tolt, Troy Wesser, Brandon Rewicki with you. Bombers started getting ready for the BC Lions, their first practice yesterday. Lots of news coming out of there. We'll hear from head coach Mike O'Shea and kick off the show with some Bombers discussion. Also, the Jets have signed another player. And then there was one. Only Connor Hellebuyck remains to be needed of a contract for this upcoming season. Needing of a contract for the upcoming season. We'll discuss that, too. And what if that gets ugly? That'll be interesting. Jets lineup, we're going to both, all three of us are going to give our Jets lineup at 7 a.m. this morning, and that'll spark some discussion, I'm sure, on the Boss Pizza fan line for an hour at 9 o'clock. Blue Jays, a lot's going on around the Major Leagues of Baseball, too, some deals. Here come the Judge, slow out of the gate. We'll talk about that. Paul Edmonds, Milt Stegall, Jason Cole, lots going on in the NFL. Training camps, literally, gentlemen, in the National Football League. Like a week and a half away, July 27th, I saw the Chicago Bears are opening camp. They should open today. But that's another story. How are we today, gentlemen?
Not too bad, man. Had a fun night. Was telling Wicks here before we were getting going that young fella had a game last night, and we lost 10-8 in soccer. It was a marvelous display of offensive prowess. Normally, you'd hear that score, and you'd think it must have been a gonk show defensively. But it was beautiful on the pitch, man. It was the most. Everybody watching was so wildly entertained. The boys are absolutely fantastic. And then we went for ice cream after the game, and Trey got an ice cream cone. I swear to goodness, guys, it was as big as his head, and he ate the whole dang thing. I bowed to him at the end of it. I didn't think there was a chance in heck he could do it. And he finished it off, so we had a real fun night on what was a gorgeous Manitoba evening.
Ice cream, you scream, we all scream for ice cream.
I had a little ice cream too yesterday.
It's hard. Actually. It's so hard staying away from it when the young fella goes to get it, boys.
I had a Frosty for the first time in, I think, 8 years yesterday.
Oh, yeah?
And I will be going back right after the show is over.
Uh-oh.
It was out 99 cents. It was outstanding.
Which is Jonesing.
Oh, yeah, wow. I had a great night. The Frosty that was basically all I did.
I had my last ice cream on the weekend. I'm back at it.
Yeah?
Other than the cold ones and the food, but that's it for the ice cream. Back at it. Sweating it out. Lots to get to today. We're going to hear from head coach Mike O'Shea at the bottom of the hour. But let's start with the news sort of heading into this weekend and the battle with the BC Lions. We all knew that Travis Lule was most likely starting. But what was the extent of the injury for Jonathan Jennings? And how specifically would this change the BC Lions coming up this weekend? He is week to week, so he will not officially be a part of this game on the weekend for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers as they head to BC to take on the Lions. And Travis Lule gets a start and a week to prepare for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. And I guess the Blue Bombers get a week to prepare for Travis Lule, who came off the bench and looked really good in helping the BC Lions get a win against the Hamilton Tiger Cats. MRI reveals no structural damage for Jennings, but he is week to week.
Don't discount what Travis Lule might do here in getting an opportunity to play some games. This right now, remember, he was one hell of a quarterback. 32-11 was his touchdown interception ratio in 2011, 28-10, 19-11. Then his arm got in all kinds of trouble with the shoulder, right? The surgery, came back, was never as strong, was never really in a position to play again until right about now. The talk is that his shoulder is back to 100%, and this is no drop-off whatsoever. A healthy Travis Lule should be a starting quarterback in this league. And I don't know how long Jonathan Jennings is going to be out. The dynamic talent that Jonathan Jennings brings to the table from an athletic standpoint is unmatched here. But you get Travis Lule, who's pretty nifty on his in his own right at 33 years old still. And with what he brings to the table from a complete understanding of the game, the BC Lions will not miss a beat. And in fact, they might even become a little bit more sound under the guidance of Travis Lule here. So it's this is hardly a drop-off whatsoever. For a while, they've had one, maybe the best backup quarterback sort of sleeping and resting here in Travis Lule. And the BC Lions are still going to be an absolute handful for however many weeks Jonathan Jennings misses.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know still. I think you have to take what happened last week with a grain of salt. Just because 436 against Hamilton is below average so far this season with what they're doing on defense. A bit of a joke, but it's not really that far out. You know what I mean?
That's true. Like, their average surrendered in the air is 441, but he did come off the bench. He missed two series, so, I think, right?
Yeah, so he might have. He would have got to 500. Yeah, so that's fair. So maybe it was a pretty solid performance. Yeah, so, I mean, there's a bit of that, but even then, I guess if you're going to take, what, like 80 yards off his total, so he's at 350 off the bench, something like that against a normal CFL defense. Troy's right. I mean, the only reason he was, I guess his status was diminished over 2 years was because of that shoulder. And he was throwing lame ducks. Like, it wasn't totally his fault kind of thing. It was just the body wasn't able to kind of follow up with what the mind was seeing out there. And he just wasn't able to get the ball to where it needed to be. But if his arm's back, then, yeah, that's terrifying. That's the worst possible case scenario for teams in the West. So I said yesterday that I think with Jennings out, it gives the Bombers a chance. I think they're still underdogs with Lule at the helm, but I wouldn't have picked the Bombers to keep it super close if Jennings was in at quarterback. But I think Lule, you lose just a little bit in terms of arm strength, and I think mobility is where the Bombers have always struggled against quarterbacks, it seems like, and Jennings brings that in spades. Lule's a solid athlete, but you know, probably has lost a step when it comes to speed and that sort of thing now that he's 33. So, yeah, it's going to be brutal for the Bombers to keep it under 30 points with Lule in. But I think they have a chance as opposed to if Jennings was healthy and in. I wouldn't have liked their chances to be competitive with, you know, 5-6 minutes left in the game.
Milt Stegall and Matt Dennegan were debating last night on TSN and TSN.ca. And Milt Stegall is going to join us at 8 o'clock. Who the best team in the CFL is? And on the big show today on TSN 1290, I'm asking you gentlemen, Matt Dennegan said it's the Eskimos. They're 3-0. They're undefeated, including a road win. Milt Stegall says it's the BC Lions, 3-1, a home loss to the Eskimos. But not only have rattled off three straight road wins, but they've done it in the East on the road and come into this battle Friday against Winnipeg 3-1. With Lule at the helm, whom do you think the best team in the CFL is right now?
I was watching that debate, and both those fellas are pretty committed to their thoughts. To me, if you want to try and determine who the best team in the league is, you better get ready for the playoffs and ultimately battle for the Grey Cup here. It's a tough call, real tough call for me. That was a fantastic game in week one where Edmonton strolled into BC and you go win a game on the road. And then, you know, BC going into Toronto, into Montreal, and then into Hamilton, it's real tough when you consider that the West is, I think, 10-2-1 against the East this year. It's pretty hard to quantify, or to quantify just exactly, you know, what is that worth compared to what Edmonton has accomplished. But you are talking about you drop your home opener and then you rattle off three victories on the road. That's pretty darn impressive. I would have to lean towards BC being a better team because I think their defense is better. And when you looked at, they've given up only 87 points in four games played. That's pretty impressive. So if I'm going to be forced to pick a team here, I will lean towards BC. But Edmonton and Calgary are right there. Those three right now are three pretty nasty, snarly teams.
Yeah, I think maybe there's a bit of recency bias if you think that way in terms of, you know, Milton and Matt, because the Stampeders lost last week, sure, but in the last 2 years, how many times have they lost again? Dave Dickinson as a head coach, what is it, two? Two or three regulation
three
losses?
Three now, I think,
three?
Yeah.
So they lost three times in 2 years. I'll take that team. Well, I'll take the stamps.
The debate was like right now, and that's BC. That was Milt Stegall's argument, is like they're the best team in the league. And Matt Dennegan said right now, as of today, it's the Edmonton Eskimos, and they went back and forth. I get the argument for the BC Lions. I truly do. And maybe on paper they're better, but right now, today, the one loss for BC at home was to this undefeated Edmonton Eskimos team. So it's a great debate, I think, at this early point of the season. And then you bring up the Calgary Stampeders. The reason I go with those two over Calgary, and Calgary's probably, you know, well, they're not probably, they are third, is just they lost to Montreal. And Montreal's just not a very good football team. But I thought it was an interesting debate. BC goes on the road three times to the east. Much harder to travel to the east if you're BC, Edmonton, Calgary?
Well, no, it's harder to travel west, I think, typically, right, when you're talking about how late it can be when you're playing, especially when you're from the east. But BC also stayed out east to try and minimize the effects of a road trip. But nonetheless, they're, like, to be out on the road for 3 weeks and to go and win those games after the disappointing home loss, that's impressive no matter who it's up against. But it's really difficult to try and determine who the better team is right now. I think there's it is a great question. Those three teams, though, I think right now, it's as much as it, you know, might hurt or Bomber fans might be upset with it, I think you got to point towards those three teams as far as being the class of the league right now.
Calgary gave up 27 points to Montreal, and to me, I was a little surprised by the loss to Montreal. I was surprised they gave up that many points, and then it sort of reiterated to me that I just didn't think the Bombers' offense was executing at any high level against the Stamps. Like, if Montreal can put up 27, and I look at the mistakes the Bombers did, I would like to see this game again.
Yeah, I mean, I think Calgary had a bit of an off night, too. I mean, I don't think the Stampeders team we saw in Montreal is the one you see 17 out of the next 18 games in a season, and plus Messam gets tossed at the end of the first half, so that kind of throws their offensive game plan into a bit of a disarray. But, I mean, hey, if you're going to look at solely records, then yeah, Calgary's not the best team, but I think that's just fool's gold. If you're just going to look at Edmonton 3-0 and say, yep, they played three games, they haven't lost, that's the best team in the league.
Do you guys like Jerome Messam?
As a guy or as a player?
Well, as a player, it's hard not to like him. As an individual and a guy who gets tossed in the first quarter on the road and who literally, as I said, against the Bombers, I just personally, as a guy, I'm not sure he's my kind of guy. I didn't like the gesture to the Bombers bench, but fair enough, it happens. I don't, one way or the other, I'm a big boy. I didn't like the taking a knee and praying with him after they dangles his junk at him and tells him to do whatever to it. And then he gets tossed in the first quarter of a road game.
Well, dude, I've told you this, and grabbing your junk towards the opposing team's bench and then going in for that prayer circle, that's nothing. That is a can of worms, and I'm not sure you want to open it up if you want to start talking about that sort of thing. But Jerome Messam, prior to the most the sort of second comeback of Jerome Messam, that's why he was unemployed in July, is because of his attitude and the way he sort of carries himself. So, like, Jerome Messam, the teammate, I'm not so sure about, for sure. And, you know, seemed to grab some level of humility when no one was signing him there a couple years back, and then to come back and work his way into what he is right now. But the dude between the lines, and I mean, he stands alone. Who or what is 6'3", 255, 260? And when his shoulders are square to that line of scrimmage, it's lights out. Like, I can't stand him as a fan of the Bombers. I see his name, the number, everything. I just can't stand what he does out there. But he is an absolute beast when he's given the ball. And he's also pretty – he's shockingly nifty and nimble for a big fellow as a receiver and that sort of thing as well. So he's as good as you get, more or less. And then as a teammate – I'm not so sure about him, and that was a contributing factor as to why he did not have a job just a few years ago in July.
I think it's solely dependent on the environment he's in. You know, a place like Calgary where it's stacked talent all across the board and you kind of do it our way or it doesn't work, then that sort of thing can maybe keep it from bubbling up above the surface. But do you think Jerome Messam would work in Saskatchewan with Chris Jones or name some other kind of volatile situation?
Would he work with Mike O'Shea? I don't think so. getting tossed like that?
Well, it's, I mean, like, that, it's not like something it's a, like that can happen.
Yeah,
once.
It's not a constant thing where he's getting tossed every three or four games. He didn't get tossed at all last year with Calgary. It was just kind of a. I mean, if it happens regularly, then it's not going to work in Calgary either, right? Yeah. But it didn't happen last year with the Stamps.
Okay, we'll take a break. More CFL talk, and we will hear from head coach Michael Shea. The Blue Bombers at the bottom of the hour. But up next, the Jets only have one player left to sign. That's coming up on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
The TSN 1290 Summer Street Team is at Winnipeg's best events all summer long. We'll be at concerts, sporting events, charity fundraisers, and more. And we'll be bringing our Spin to Win wheel. And you'll have a chance to win great stuff like Jets gear, Tim Hortons and McMunn and Yates gift cards, a Burton snowboard with bindings from Alter Ego Sports, and weekend road trip getaways from Explore Egan, Minnesota, including two-night stay at the Egan Holiday Inn Express, a $100 gift card for Casper's Cherokee of Egan, and family passes for four to Nickelodeon Universe, Moose Mountain, and Sea Life at Mall of America, and more. You can see us next at MTS Super Spike this weekend, July 21st and 22nd at Maple Grove Rugby Park. For more information on these great events and the TSN 1290 Summer Street Team, visit tsn1290.ca. And then there were one gentleman yesterday. The Winnipeg Jets announced they have agreed to terms with forward J.C. LaPon on a one-year, two-way contract with an average annual value of $650,000. He was one of two remaining restricted free agents. The other one, of course, is goaltender Connor Hellebuyck, who has filed for arbitration. LaPon is 24 years old. He played in 71 games for the Manitoba Moose last season and had 30 points, 12 goals, 18 assists, and 129 penalty minutes. Of course, the year prior, he made his NHL debut and played 9 games for the Jets, recording 1 assist. Your thoughts on the deal for J.C. LaPon?
No real thoughts. I do wonder, 24 years old, and I just... You love the game of J.C. LaPon for sure, right? It's not hard to cheer for J.C. LaPon, but you're starting to wonder at this point in time going forward how the opportunity for him to break into the big league. I just don't know if it's there. I don't think it is there.
No. And there was a bit of hope for it, too, because two years ago, he had 30 points in 45 games with the Moose, mm-hmm. stuck at 30 points in 71 games this time around. So... You know, maybe if that production continued to climb a little bit, you might look at that and think, all right, we might have one of those fourth-line pests, you know, maybe kind of like a Scotty Upshaw type of mold, like with the Blues, a smaller guy that's not afraid to get in there and bang. But I just don't know if the production's going to be good enough at the NHL level. So, I mean, at the very least, another good, solid forward for the Moose in the A.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I remember when Keith McCambridge 2 years ago was coaching J.C. LaPon, and I think he was leading the team or one of the leaders in scoring, and then he was in a bit of a drought, and Keith McCambridge told myself and play-by-play man Mitch Peacock, I had a quick meeting with J.C. this morning and just said, you know, this isn't how you're going to get to the league. The NHL is by scoring. They need you to be agitative. They need you to be grinding. They need you to be that hardworking. And he goes, if you do that... and become, you know, hard to play against and get back to your original reason they drafted you, you'll probably get a shot up there. And the next game, he got 5 points. He had like 2 goals and 3 assists and 5 points, and he got back to the banger and crasher. I think it's depth for the Moose as well, and for 1 year at that price, I have no problem with it. August 1st is the arbitration hearing for Connor Hellebuyck, and this morning on the Big Show TSN 1290, I heard Rick Ralph on his debut with Husser on the afternoon ride yesterday on TSN 1290. They were discussing it, and this did come up. What if this gets ugly? Like, what is Connor Hellebuyck looking for here? August 1st is about, I guess, just over 2 weeks away. Arbitration hearings are nasty. And the reason I wonder about this is a young goaltender that the Jets clearly still believe is the future, although not right now. That's why they signed Steve Mason. We all know that. We all see it. So Connor Hellebuyck sees it as well. If he doesn't sort of get the deal or the money he's looking for, is this something that could... Well, I think it is. It's not a question of this relationship. This is an interesting time between the organization and Connor Hellebuyck with this next deal, is it not?
I guess it is, but it's a little bit hard for me to imagine that Connor Hellebuyck is kind of getting a little bit big for his britches, or like what he can possibly come into the situation and be expecting from what was, you know, numerically anyway. Like I'm not sure what you can provide from his camp to really make a super strong point in front of you. And even the underlying, like, there's no analytical sort of approach to it that they can say, you know, we have these underlying numbers or anything like that. It's just, it was a below average type of a 56 game season for him last year. So I don't think there's all kinds of time left. I'm not concerned. It's July 18th, you still got a fair number of days here to get the something done, and I completely expect to get it, for it to get done prior to the first.
Yeah, I mean, it could happen today, right? Like, I'm assuming it's somewhat minor details working out, because there's not a whole lot of track record for Hellebuck to kind of point back on, with him having full year last year and, I don't know, a third of the year prior to that. So, I mean, 24 to 25 players last season filed for arbitration and didn't go to a hearing. So you're talking about a 96% avoidance rate when it comes to arbitration. So I'm not really concerned at all. Even if it does go to arbitration, I'm not really concerned.
But are you concerned about the relationship? Like, Connor Hellebuck's going to sit here and go, I'll tell you what analytically you can look at. Your team is awful in front of me. So that's not my fault. And I deserve a contract. And I deserve a long-term or a three-year. Or I deserve, you know, we all sit here and go, he deserves about 1.5 over 2 years. He could be sitting there going, I want 5 over 2 years. And this is why. And these are the reasons.
Well, then it's reality check time if that's the case. I mean, I just don't really see that playing out. I mean, it's kind of,
I don't see that approach from their side either. I know we can speculate maybe it is, but it's hard.
Well, I'm
for
just
me to
asking, because this is how these relationships and organizations and players go south, is things like this. You bring in somebody else,
it could.
You lowball me, I got a backup for 2 years, now I'm 25. Historically, that's half my career's over. Now where do I sit trying to get paid, trying to get money? It could be him sitting there going, I want out maybe if this doesn't go properly over the next 2 years.
But he could, you know, the next couple of days, say 2 years, 1.5, yeah. All right, let's do this.
I'll prove myself.
Well, yeah. I just don't think he has any negotiating power.
He doesn't have a lot, that's for sure, right?
We'll take a break. More Jets coming up at 7 o'clock, including what we think the starting lineup will look like on opening night. But up next, Bombers and head coach Michael Shea on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Leave the back gate unlocked because TSN's coming over on select evenings throughout the summer. TSN 1290 will back up the truck with a portable party for up to 25 people, including a hot tub for you to soak in over the course of a week, provided by our friends at Oasis Leisure Center. An iGrill 2 digital app connected thermometer for each grand prize winner, provided by Lux Barbecue Company. A family pack of fireworks to light up your night, courtesy of Archangel Fireworks. Beverages, including a sampling of Tall Grass Vodka, Winnipeg's only grain 2-bottle vodka, produced by Capital K Distillery, and catering by Qdoba Mexican Eats, including a burrito bowl hot bar with tortillas, so you can make tacos and an abundance of 3-cheese queso. We'll also have TSN 1290 crew on site to help serve and set up. Parties will happen Thursday evenings from now until August, including this Thursday, July the 20th and August 10th. Enter online at tsn1290.ca, and we hope to be seeing you very soon. The Big Show on TSN 1290, 35 minutes past the hour. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki.
See how the KHL has a 33-day break in their upcoming schedule this year, boys? 33-day break for the Olympics?
For what?
Oh,
Slava Malamud saying Mother Russia is all in.
Wow.
See a nice juicy gold medal sitting there.
If they, could you imagine if they didn't win it this year?
There'll be immense pressure on them to win.
Maybe
sure.
As much or more than when it was in Sochi.
Ever. Yeah, probably ever, right?
And I don't know if you guys saw, I saw this late last night. Slava Malamud was actually tweeting it out, but Sport Express, the I guess the main sport publication in Russia, unveiled their top Russian hockey players of all time. Mm-hmm. Who do you think was number one?
I read
Trechak?
It.
Trechak.
Oh, sorry, Current. Well, it wasn't Current because McGillney was on there too. But Trechak wasn't. Mm-hmm. Number one was. We can get to it at maybe 7:45, but Gino. Yeah. Gino was number one.
And yet he's not top 100 in the league, National Hockey League. Interesting. I'm putting that down. Interesting news there, for sure. A 33-day break.
Yep.
When the NHL's run, was it 3 weeks?
I think it was only 2 weeks.
Got to get rested. Got to get them together, practicing together.
Yeah, I think it was two and a half weeks. It was closer to three, but it wasn't a full. I think you're right. That's interesting. The big show on TSN 1290, Blue Bombers returned to practice yesterday to start get ready for the BC Lions. They'll be there at 9 o'clock kickoff Central Time. Full Manuk Dencher Blue Bomber game day coverage with Darren Bombing, Troy Westwood, and Chris Welby on Friday evening as well. Andrew Harris did not practice, took a Veterans Day, and joined Darren Bombing last night on CFL 60, 6 o'clock Monday nights right here on TSN 1290. But also at practice, tell us about a Veteran Day, first of all.
Well, it's something certainly that like Chris Welby would have smacked when you said that, would have smacked this table and to talk about it, because he just, there were something that was, they were much more rare back in the day. But as we were talking yesterday, as sports coaches, management, and players start to utilize the implementation of rest a little bit more, you know, come out of the game a little banged up, nicked up, and could use an additional day of rest, that's when you pull out the veteran card and say, "Coach, man, I could really use another day." Right. So when you're, you know, when you're looking at a guy like Andrew Harris that gives you some real hard running and all the rest of it, and it's not like he's a 25, 26 year old body here. He's, that body's seen some miles. It just does him a whole lot of good to have another full day and full night of sleep, taking it easy like that.
I think more so that it's Andrew Harris. You want him as rested and refreshed as possible, because I mean, as a running back, his job is fairly straightforward in the offense, right? Like, it's not like he's going to need those extra practice days to get acclimated with what they're trying to do there. And so for a 30-year-old running back, if he wants to take all week off, I'm more than okay with that. Because he doesn't take a playoff during the game. He runs hard enough in the game, you know, to kind of earn a week's worth of practice time off.
That's where you get the veteran thing, right? Like, a coach would have faith that he knows his play, his responsibilities in the playbook inside and out. It doesn't really matter if it's running back, receiver, linebacker, anybody sitting down like that. You can, you know, you can even be, sometimes you'll see a player not practice at all, and just, if the coach will ask you early on in the week, are you going to be good to go for the game? And if the coach has faith and trust in you, if you answer yep, then it doesn't matter. Just go all week and not practice and be ready to go on game day.
Plus, I think a veteran, especially like Harris, would know his body. Like, he wouldn't be asking for an extra day if he didn't know that he might need an extra day to just sort of heal up a little bit as well. The other interesting news yesterday was receiver TJ Thorpe has taken LaDainian Washington's spot on the first team offense. He was injured at the start of camp and then came in, and I just happened to, I didn't go to much of camp this year, but I did go to one or two, and he was all over the offense in that practice. He was back from injury, and then he got injured again a couple days later in camp. Not only is he back healthy again, but he's taken over LaDainian Washington's role in the offense. Here's head coach Mike O'Shea on what he expects from TJ Thorpe and his role in the offense this weekend.
We're not quite sure yet. We'll see. Certainly know that he's a smart football player. He's into it, right? He's always paid great attention to the details that were going on, even when he wasn't in. So that certainly allows him to get on the field and be in the right spot and know what he's supposed to be doing very quickly compared to someone who doesn't pay the attention to the kind of details that he does. So he's got a good start that way.
And when I mean all over the offense that day at camp, I mean he was like in different lineups at the receivers. He was doing different packages, and they were getting them the ball a lot. What do you expect from TJ Thorpe, and how big of an addition is this?
It's a fair question to ask, because I think LaDainian Washington brings a lot of remarkable athletic skill as well, and he hasn't done much in the three games played this year. Four receptions for 59 yards. So certainly they've been talking a whole bunch, and they're real high on the athleticism here of Thorpe, and you just wonder if he's going to be able to go in. And, you know, there's all kinds of examples of guys having ridiculous athletic skill, like just a super long list that would blow most people's minds. The guys that come in and they have the They have the toolbox. They have the skill set. They have all the measurables. They go out in the practice field, and they're capable of remarkable things. But for some reason, some percentage of guys just can't make that transition into game. And it just doesn't – their skill doesn't show, or there's not the production that you need to have during the game time. So let's hope that Thorpe is in a position to go out there and make some noise. Unfortunately for Washington, he hasn't been able to sort of put any of that on display.
Yeah, and it's interesting too, because it's two completely different body types. Because you have Washington, who's that long, lanky receiver. You know, maybe you want to throw a jump ball up down the middle of the field and let the big guy come down with it. Whereas Thorpe, you know, built way more like a running back. You know, I knew he was short, but I didn't know he was, what is it, 215?
5'11", 217, yeah.
217.
Thorpe's 5'11", yeah.
Yeah, so that's a stocky dude right there. So, I mean, it adds a level of explosiveness to the offense, which, I mean, regardless of size, that's something you can always use more of, I think. And I think it just simply came down to the fact that Washington just didn't do enough with the opportunity that he had. You know, he had a chance, three games, to make maybe more of an impact. And when you're kind of the fifth man when it comes to the pass catchers on offense, you need to do a little bit more with that. And now it's up to TJ Thorpe. And he'll get an opportunity to do the exact same thing Washington had.
TJ Heath in the secondary, of course, came over in the Drew Willey trade to the Toronto Argos and came with a first-round pick as well. 10 defensive tackles and 4 picks, including the one to seal the deal last Thursday against the Argos. Here's head coach Mike O'Shea on how good TJ Heath has played.
Yeah, he just seems to find the ball, doesn't he? And, I mean, talk about timely, holy jumping. End of the game, it's always nice to end the game on an interception. He's got great ball skills, right? He's got great hand-eye, and he's sure-handed. So he's got good feet. He gets to the spot before the receiver does, and he reads offenses, the route combinations pretty well.
It's pretty crazy to already have 4 picks. And that's quite a pace to keep up. He came in last year when he arrived. He had 5 picks already with Toronto in 10 games. But right now, leading the league with his 4 picks, it's pretty impressive stuff, man, in 3 games.
So he and along with Taylor Loeffler, and well, let's run this first. Here's head coach Mike O'Shea on Taylor Loeffler's impact as well.
The whole defense has come to really appreciate what Taylor does back there. Yeah, he's ferocious. He's a ferocious hitter.
He truly is. In a day and age where you just don't see a whole lot of ferocious hitters anymore, for whatever, just the game has changed in a way, and you got to be so careful in how you deliver your hits. I saw that one penalty in the playoff game last year that was a bunch of crap, I thought, on Loeffler. But just this past game against Toronto, you saw a couple times where he creates alligator arms out there with his receivers, and just a couple of fantastic blows that'll separate the body from the ball. He's the real deal. There's no doubt in that.
And you know, the same way old school basketball centers, and I know even Dwight Howard would do this too, where the first shot in the paint of the game, they would take a goaltending just to kind of set the tone a little bit.
Yeah.
Like with Loeffler, if he wants to take a 15-yard roughing, you know, roughing a defenseless receiver penalty to set the tone a bit, I'll eat that one every once in a while.
Yep.
I thought he tracks the ball very well, too. Like, when he's back there, he's very quick sideline to sideline. This is the Big Show on TSN 1290. Also, Mike O'Shea had these thoughts on facing Travis Lule, whom TJ Heath and Loeffler and the rest of the defense will have to slow down on Friday night.
I mean, he's been in this league and been a good player, been fun to watch for a number of years. So, you know, sitting back watching the game, it was pretty exciting stuff.
You know, when you got a guy like Travis Lule upcoming here, and the role that he would have been playing with the BC Lions since the arrival of Jonathan Jennings, you're talking about he would be working hand-in-hand with Kahari Jones as offensive coordinator in developing plays and all those sorts of things. He would be a great shoulder and ear to lean on for Kahari Jones to implement things offensive. There will be nobody that knows the playbook more in and out with detail than Travis Lule, with his veteran, what he brings to the table as a veteran, and how he's, what he's done to help develop their play calling and the playbook here. So he's going to be a handful. There is no drop off whatsoever here. I really don't think so from Jonathan Jennings, from Travis Lule. And what a great opportunity for him, who's been on the sideline, forced to that backup role, relegated there, watching this young stud in Jonathan Jennings, and then to get this opportunity to shine for a little bit until Jennings is due to come back. What a great break here for Travis Lule.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting, and especially with Heath and Loeffler and all them back there. Does the game plan for the Bombers change any between Lule and Jennings? I mean, you always come with a game plan, but when you're focusing on Jennings over Lule or vice versa, would you change it much? Or
I wouldn't change it a whole lot. I know Wick's referenced that maybe Lule won't be as active as far as leaving the pocket and stuff, but Lule is really nifty. Like, he's got all kinds of, and he hasn't been hit very much in the last 2-3 years. So he's 33 years old, but he's still super nifty. I wouldn't downplay or try and minimize what he's capable of doing if there's an alley or a hole or something like that in the pocket for him to escape. If he can escape, he'll go out and dangle pretty good. So I wouldn't suspect that their game plan would be much different if affected really whatsoever.
No, I don't think so either, really. I mean, Jennings is a lot more... I mean, he's the most mobile quarterback in the league, right? I mean, he's a threat every time he breaks contain in the pocket to take it 15, 20 yards downfield. Lule's more of, I think, kind of like a Darian Durant type of rushing quarterback, if you will. You know, a guy that, you know, if the opportunity arises for him, he'll probably run for the first down. But he's not going to break a 30 or a 40 yarder off of him. But I think if you're the Bombers D line, especially, you're probably trying to keep him in the pocket somewhat and hopefully get pressure up the middle on him. So I don't think a whole lot really is going to change.
Linebacker Ian Wild is officially on the 6-game injured list. I saw him at the game on Thursday and had a cast from his elbow all the way over his hand and really, really thick, big cast as well. So he looks to have a wrist injury and might take longer than the 6 weeks minimum as well. We'll talk more Bombers and CFL coming up at 8 o'clock when Milt Stegall joins us. But up next, we talk some baseball, including the Blue Jays, on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and Robertson College present Manitobaville. We're awarding $25,000 to put towards a project that enhances one special Manitoba community. All entries are in. Our panel of judges will now narrow down the selection to our top 10. You'll be able to watch the top 10 project community videos as of Monday, July 24th at tsn1290.ca, where you'll also be able to vote for your favorite. Whoever gets the most votes as of Friday, August 4th at noon, will receive the $25,000 grand prize. Manitobaville, make one hometown even prouder. Presented by Robertson College and proudly supported by Chicken Chef, Star Ready to Move Homes, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, Merrick Contractors. For more information, visit tsn1290.ca. Jim, Troy, and Brandon on The Big Show. Baseball time, gentlemen. And I'll start with, we talked about this a little bit yesterday, but I was watching it again after the show. Brett Phillips from the Milwaukee Brewers has the most unique laugh, not only in baseball, but maybe in history, where his right eye closes and he looks like he's going into, I don't want to say convulsion, but just a steady pause of, and makes a weird noise. Have you guys seen this?
Unfortunately, yeah.
You don't like it?
I don't find it funny. Like, some people look at it and it makes them laugh and stuff. I just think it's kind of weird. I don't like it. I almost wonder, now it's like he's a circus monkey and laugh for us so we can all giggle. And I don't know how authentic it is at this point. It's just kind of weird to me.
Well, they had him on the Major League Baseball Network yesterday, and they started throwing, like, the cheesiest jokes at him.
And he got into a fit of laughter. That's why I question the authenticity.
Yes, and I understand what you're saying, because it is kind of weird. Like, it's to watch this take place and to make a – but I don't think they're – well, they are now making a gimmick out of it. However
– Someone said it sounded like a donkey underwater.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, if a pterodactyl and a donkey mated – in prehistoric times, it would be that's the laugh you're getting.
Wow, there's a visual.
But I could understand, like, in the concept of being on a team, how funny would that be watching this guy laugh? And how often a day would you, especially in baseball, try to make him laugh?
You got to wonder, yeah.
If I'm Brett Phillips, I'm milking that too. I don't know how highly of a touted a prospect he is, but if it keeps me making big league dough instead of going out to AAA, yeah, I'll tell me all the dad jokes you got. I'm laughing every second.
You should Google it, the dad jokes. That's what they were. Google it if you want. Also, the Houston Astros, because it's been since the middle of May, since Carlos Beltran has played the field, had a funeral service for his glove yesterday prior to the game, and everybody dressed in black, and they went out to the outfield, and Brian McCann donned a not a cape, but a what do you call those? Like a
it looked like a cloak.
A cape? Cloak, yes, yeah. Thank you. And they had a funeral service for his glove, to which I thought the best line was spoken on TSN SportsCenter last night when they said baseball players have way too much time on their hands.
Well, yeah, and you can screw around when you're 62 and 31, right?
Yeah, the Blue Jays are. I don't see the only funeral service for the Blue Jays is the season.
Yeah, when you're winning,
every time they step out in the diamond.
When you're winning, you can goof around a whole lot.
I guess so. That's true, but it was kind of funny as well. And then Beltran hit another bomb as a DH for last night for the Astros, who lost. Carlos Correa, their shortstop, too, left the game with a thumb injury. However, we are going to talk Jays in the next hour, and Steve Phillips on which Jays are most likely to get traded. They did take the series opener in Boston last night, 4-3. They have two more series after this one in Boston throughout the second half, and the next two series come in September. This is a massive series for the Blue Jays if they want to do anything. They gained a game on the Red Sox yesterday. They're 8 back. But let's talk about Aaron Judge before this segment wraps up. He's 1-for-24 since the home run derby. He says it has nothing to do with it. Do you believe that?
Well, I believe he believes that, but we also have history to lean on. We see guys go in there and swinging for the fence the way they do, and I think it's a fair thing to liken it to playing Texas Scrabble for your golf game where you're just trying to hammer it all the time, and then you go back to a regular golf game and your swing's gone, right? And there's too much history here. We've seen it happen too often with the home run derby where guys go back and fall into a little bit of a slump. So I'm sure he doesn't think he's been affected by it, but it's and he's been robbed also of a home run as of late and all the rest of it, so a little bit of bad luck with him, but it's hard to argue or debate the 1-24, how stark it was compared to when he went into the home run derby.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, and this is really, they all say this, but there are a ton of guys who go in this thing and do it for 2 years and then maybe put up 28 bombs and refuse to go in it again. Like, there is this is riddled with guys who, because of what's going on with Aaron Judge, have probably 3 to 5 more years of this event in them, and they refuse to do it.
Yeah, and you wonder how that's going to play out, too. But I don't know. I mean, at the Derby, though, it wasn't like he was swinging for the fences. He's just a big dude that made contact with the, like, his first two home runs of the Derby, he went opposite field and dead center, which you never see in a home run Derby. And 1-for-24, I think, is, that's what, about four or five, maybe six games worth of at-bats for Judge so far. So, I mean, I'm not going to pin it on the Derby just yet, but if it turns into kind of a 2-for-35, 3-for-40 type of deal, then, yeah, it's kind of hard to just pin that as a coincidence. But hopefully it's just kind of a mini slump here, because baseball needs this guy raking all the time. Because he's turned into must-watch TV now every time the Yankees are on television.
Well, even the throw home yesterday from the field in Minnesota that got a guy at home plate from the right field, 97 miles an hour. That came on a rope. We will talk Jays in the next hour. Of course, Steve Phillips, a TSN baseball insider, on potential deals for the Jays. But up next, we give our lineups, what we think the Jets will look like line-wise, line combinations, after camp breaks. That's next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Pick up your official TSN 1290 discount golf card today. Hit the greens throughout the summer with great two-for-one deals at a multitude of Manitoba golf courses, including the Scottswood Links Golf Course, Kingswood Golf and Country Club, La Vironde Golf Course, Bell Acres Golf and Country Club, and the Steinbeck Flying Golf Club, just to name a few. Book a tee time and show your card for great rates. Cards are only $34.95 each. Some restrictions apply. To purchase your card and for a complete list of participating courses, visit tsn1290.ca. The Big Show on the Royal Sports Power Hour. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki on TSN 1290, 5 minutes past the hour. Gentlemen, we mentioned it yesterday. let's get into it. We're trying to figure out if the team could be better defensively, the penalty kill, how everything's going to work, and where and who would be doing what. So let's get into where we think the lineup and what it will look like as camp breaks. Now, there's two ways to approach this, what we think the team will do and what each of you would do.
That's right. And how do you want to approach it?
Well, I would say let's just go what you would do.
Okay.
Well, let's mix
it in. That's
a
little
both.
More fun.
Yeah. And mix it in with both if you want. Like you say, I have this here, but if I do think that they'll go this way, but this is what I would do and all that good stuff. Go ahead, Mr. Westwood.
Okay, this is what these are the lines that I like, not necessarily what I think they're going to do. But I would go Ehlers, Scheifele, Line A, and I would keep that together for a long, long time. And then my second line with Little and Wheeler to help, I'm going to run Connor up there for sure to start just to see what the kid can do and protect him with the veteran wherewithal of Little and Wheeler. And then I'm going to bounce Perreault down to the third line. I'm not willing to say what I would do to have Lowry on the fourth line because I think it's too unrealistic. And I'm going to keep Lowry in the third hole because he's just so obvious that that's where they want him. So I'll go Perreault, Lowry, Armia with my third line. And then on the fourth line, I'm going to... It's hard to put lines in when you feel they're different from what the team's going to do, you know?
Well, fill in yours and then go, this is what I would do, but then this is what I think they're going to do.
Because I would love to see Patan in it to I think, you know, and it's real difficult to know if he's going to take a step. Is he going to be a little bit stronger defensively? And certainly what he can do out there to complement your power play. At the very least, the second team power play. There's talents that he brings to the table here. But so my bottom six are going to stick a little bit more to what I think the team does, just because of the way they seem to think and go with the fourth line of Matthias, Kopp, and Dano.
And you would instead put Patan.
I would find a place to have Patan in there. I don't know if maybe I'd go Perreault, Patan, Armia for my third line, and then bump Lowry down to the fourth line to have it expecting that they're going to have – they seem to like Matthias more so than Dano, and even from a salary standpoint, we see this come into play a bunch. So, you know, if I had my way to start, I'd go with my fourth line, Perreault, Patan, Armia, and then on the fourth line, Lowry in the middle with – Matthias on the left and Kopp on the right, or Kopp on the left and Matthias on the right.
Mr. Rewicki.
Yeah, we're going to have some fun here. And I was kind of wrestling with the top line, but I did this in part because I think it could work out and in part because I want to see JT's head explode here. But in kind of a similar mode to what the Penguins have done in the past couple of years, where they have molded three scoring lines and then had a fourth line that they can feel comfortable throwing out everywhere. I kind of lean more towards that model. And so with the top line, I don't know if you split up Scheifele and Wheeler. Like that might just kind of end up being a classic duo as long as those two are on the same team together. So I'm keeping Scheifele and Wheeler together on the top line. And Troy, you said you wanted to find a spot for Nick Patan in the lineup somewhere?
Come on.
Why not Nick Patan with those two? And the reason I say that is, when you watch Nick Patan's game, isn't there a little bit of a Connor Sheary or a Jake Gensel in what he does? A smaller, undersized, skilled forward who has a history of putting up a ton of points, but when put in a role not suited to him, you know, that part of his game disappears and it evaporates. So I kind of struggle with maybe putting Connor up there, similar to what you did, where you have, you know, a really truly skilled forward kind of help to be insulated by some more veteran teammates and some guys who have a history of of carrying players and carrying lines by themselves, which Wheeler does. But you look at the split of Patan's numbers, and this is from Jets Nation, but what he's done playing with certain types of players and how his numbers sort of reflect with who he's playing with. When he was put up with guys like Kopp, Thorburn, Stafford, and Tanev, he had a Corsi percentage of 42 and a points per 60 of 0.4, which is abysmal. Yeah. It's horrible. Like numbers that you just don't really see from NHL players, right? Like you can't perform like that. But when he was put with guys like Wheeler, Ehlers, Connor, Scheifele, Dano, a Corsi 4 of 62% and a points per 60 up above 1.5. So when you see kind of the split between those two, to me, he's a guy that you need to play with skilled guys, or else he should be down in the AHL. Like, there's almost no in-between with Nick Batan. So I'd be willing early on, at least, to see what he could do in a role that might be best suited for him. So I would roll with that as my preferred top line. Having said that, there's no way in hell that happens. So, I mean, take that for what it's worth.
If you did that, who wouldn't be on this roster then? Because I don't have Nick
Batan in terms of scratches.
Yeah, I don't have Nick Batan on the roster mostly because of the two-way contract he's under,
which is fair. But I have Sean Matthias as my healthy scratch, as my 13th forward. Then second line A, Little Ehlers. I think line A actually produced better when Brian Little was his center as opposed to Mark Scheifele. Yeah. So, I mean, let's give that a go. And I'm kind of in Troy's mold where line A, Ehlers, have those two together. If you want, whatever center you want to throw them with. And let the boys have some fun.
Agreed, yeah.
Now, the bottom six, I know teams have kind of tilted more towards the top nine than a fourth line thing. But I kind of have a top six and a bottom six, more so because the bottom six I have will play similar kinds of minutes, 5-on-5, but they'll be deployed differently. So I have a Perreault, Connor, and Dano line, which you can use, you know, primarily starting in the offensive zone and kind of let them wreak havoc on teams' third defensive pairings and maybe a third or a fourth line. And
then I have Perreault in the middle, right?
Perreault in the middle, yep. And then I have what I think is an elite fourth line of Lowry, Kopp, and Armia. And that's a line you can kind of douse with starts in the defensive zone, and you know that Lowry's unit will be able to handle that.
Love that fourth line.
So that's how I would try and roll with things, then have Matthias as my 13th forward.
Who do you think scores more, Armia or Dano? Scores more. Who do you think will score more?
That's a... Playing with the same people, you mean? Like, who's capable of scoring?
Well, just in general. I know, and rightfully so.
Well, Dano has so far up to this point in time. And if you're talking, you know, you want to go historical and look at their numbers, it's Marco Dano has scored at a considerably higher pace.
Yeah, but who do you, like, the ceiling-wise, who do you?
I think they're both pretty dang, I think there's a lot of ceiling with both those guys that you can possibly tap into.
Yeah,
neither has been given an opportunity of yet.
That's kind of the Dano. I don't know about Marco Dano, just because Paul Maurice, when he chose Thorburn and Tanev over Marco Dano and said he has to outperform those two, which he has, that kind of leads me to believe there's something else under the surface with the kid. Whatever what that is, I don't know, but it's clearly that he's in the doghouse, or as of last year, he was with Paul Maurice, whereas Joel Armia clearly has the trust of the coaching staff. So I think Joel Armia will probably end up getting more opportunity to score, but I think if Marco Dano got that chance consistently, he probably could outscore Joel Armia. But if you ask me right now, I think Armia will probably end up having more points than Dano this year.
This is the Big Show on TSN 1290, and we're giving what we predict our lines will be. I'm out of the gate as of the first game of the season in training camp. I have Mark Scheifele centering Nick Ehlers and Blake Wheeler. I'm on board with you with Scheifele and Wheeler for now. I mean, I think eventually that right side top line is Patrick Laine's. It's just a matter of when. Second line, I have Brian Little centering Matthew Perreault and Patrick Laine on the right side. And my asterisk is Wheeler and Laine. Those two lines could flip on the right side. My third line is Adam Lowry with Joel Armia and Kyle Connor, and I have the asterisk with Matthew Perreault. I think Kyle Connor, as the season wears on, could very well be on the second line with Little and Laine, and Matthew Perreault goes down to play with Lowry and Armia. My fourth line is Andrew Kopp with Sean Mathias and Marco Dano. I have Michael Scarboza and Brandon Tanev as the extra forwards for the sole reason of the one-way deals. I have Nick Batan with the Moose because of the two-way deal. And how that plays out really depends on training camp. I think if Patan has a really good training camp and Tanev or Scarboza don't, they might waive one of them. I think they might waive Brandon Tanev and somebody like that and keep Patan. It just depends on camp. But that's how I have my lines going. Ehler, Shifley, Wheeler, Perreault, Little, Laine, Connor, Lowry, Armia, Mathias, Kopp, Dano. And, of course, like I said, I could see Laine and Wheeler trading spots on the top two lines, and I could see Perreault and Connor trading lines on the second and third lines. Josh Morrissey, Jacob Trouba, Dmitry Kulikov, Dustin Byfuglien, Toby Enstrom, Tyler Myers, Ben Chiarot, the extra. How do you guys see the defense?
Well, the only question is who's playing on the left side of Byfuglien? Everything else is lined up. All right, so pick Kulikov or pick Toby. It's one or the other, and shift the other one down to the third pairing. So there's not much to talk about defensively.
Yeah, I'd go with your lineup there. I'd start off with Kulikov and Byfuglien, see if there's something there with that, because Toby's play with both Buff and Myers, so either or, you're not losing a whole lot there. I think I'd rather have Enstrom with Myers though. Just maybe a bit more mobility. Like I'd be a little bit concerned about two big dudes like that on the back end, but I'd see what Kulikov and Buff could accomplish together.
I have Mason starting out of the gate. Who do you guys have?
Well, Paul Edmonds was taken aback, who we're going to speak to in a few minutes, at the notion that he's not the starter. So, at first I thought that they'd still go with Hellebuck, but the more we hear from guys who are close to the locker room, like a Paul Edmonds, and I'm leaning towards certainly that it seems like it's going to be Steve Mason starting.
Yeah, I got Steve Mason starting 50 games at least this year, so if he's doing that, he's got to play opening night, so it's my starting goalie.
Fair enough. We'll open the Boss Pizza fan line at 9, get your lines and what you think on that, and if you have some other options for us, let us know. Paul Edmonds will join us at the bottom of this hour, but up next, Steve Phillips on what the Jays may or who they should trade as the deadline approaches 2 weeks away in the Major Leagues of Baseball. That's next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and Not Auto Corp present the Blue Bus. Before every Winnipeg Blue Bombers home game this season, we're taking W fans to Investors Group Field in our Not Auto Corp VIP Blue Bus. We'll pick you up and five buddies up as well from a starting destination, drive you to the game, and when it's done, we'll take you back to wherever you started. Prizes include six tickets to an upcoming Blue Bombers home game and free transportation to and from. To enter and to win now, go to TSN1290.ca. The Big Show, Jim Tolt, Troy Westwood,
Brandon.
Have
seen that bus?
Ruicki.
It is ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculously awesome.
High end?
Go have a, of course, yeah.
Everything Knott does.
It's the way Trevor Knott does, yeah.
Trevor Knott. Trevor
Knott. Knott boys.
Got the spadackle jeans looking good all the time.
And medium tee.
Medium tee, schmedium. Nice and tight. Overnight shirts. By all means, TSN 1290. That's going to be a fabulous time. The Blue Bus brought to you by Knott Auto Corp. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruicki on The Big Show. Paul Edmonds at the bottom of the hour. But right now, Corey Warren and Steve Phillips, TSN Baseball's insider, discussed whom the Jays should trade in the next 2 weeks as the deadline approaches. Here's Steve Phillips with Corey Warren.
Here is our baseball insider, Steve Phillips. Steve, the trade deadline is just 2 weeks away, and the Jays find themselves well back in the hunt for a playoff spot. How would you break down Toronto's plan of attack at the deadline?
I think the way to look at the Toronto Blue Jays is you have to break their players into three different categories. First, we start with the most likely to get traded. That's Marco Estrada and Jose Bautista. The veteran pitcher Estrada not having as good a season this year as he has over the last couple years, but he has proven himself to be very effective down the stretch in October as well. And so I could see teams like the Astros, the Indians, the Royals, the Twins, and maybe even the Colorado Rockies having some interest. For Jose Bautista, he's a fallback option. A lot of teams with interest in J.D. Martinez, the slugger from the Detroit Tigers, and rightfully so, having a terrific season. For those clubs that don't get Martinez, Bautista would be a nice power fit for cornerback in the outfield. Clubs like the St. Louis Cardinals, Kansas City Royals, and out west with a lot of left-handed pitchers, you could see the Diamondbacks, Dodgers, or Rockies all having interest in Bautista. The next category of players in the Blue Jays are the less likely to get traded. Guys like Jay Happ and Justin Smoke. Happ signed to a favorable contract, making $13 million next year and under control, but pitching pretty well considering the fact that his rates are good, even though his record not as effective at 3-6. But he's a guy that teams would have interest in as a lefty with veteran experience to get the job done. Justin Smoke signed to a very club-favorable contract. Remember that $8.5 million deal he signed with the Jays and an option for 2019 as well. He is a guy that is performing extremely well. You would understand why teams will call the Jays with interest. But because the contract is so favorable, someone's going to have to deliver a big-time package to get Smoke to go somewhere else. But from the Blue Jays' perspective, why not listen? Maybe he's a one-year wonder, and you cash in when he's playing his best. Now, the final category is the untouchable unless category. Guys like Josh Donaldson and Marcus Stroman. Now listen, they're two of the best players on this team, no question about it. Stroman having a fantastic year with his 9-5 record and a 3.28 earned run average. He's a guy that teams could look at to slide in as a nice number two starter heading to the postseason. And Donaldson, we know what he is, an MVP candidate, a guy who could deliver big-time leadership, big-time run production, and a guy who could play a solid third base as well. The reality is someone is going to have to absolutely knock the socks off the Blue Jays to get them to consider Donaldson and Stroman because they're an important part of this season and next year if the Blue Jays are going to compete. They're untouchable unless somebody steps up big.
Well, who is out there that could blow you away with an offer for Donaldson?
Well, I think there's only one team that could put a package together to satisfy the Toronto Blue Jays, and that's the Houston Astros. They have Alex Bregman at third base, who could be the centerpiece of the deal, with Francis Martez, a nice right-handed pitcher with quality stuff, and more prospects in a very stocked organization for the Astros. Houston is the one team that could put a package together to knock the socks off Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro. I don't think they're going to do it, but they could do it.
Our TSN Baseball Insider, Steve Phillips.
Josh Donaldson on the Houston Astros with the short porch at Minute Maid Park.
You can stop smiling. We had in your fair share of Astros talk, that's for sure.
Are you freaking kidding me? You know, Bregman is interesting because he's a very young, talented third baseman. Obviously, you know, the Jays, if they're going to get rid of Donaldson, would gain a lot in the age category there and his potential. However... Bregman was in on the Chris Sale. I heard that when they were trading Chris Sale last year from the White Sox to the Red Sox, that was the key piece that the Houston Astros didn't want to give up because of his youth in acquiring Chris Sale. So then he ended up in Boston. Do you think the Jays do a trade? Whether it's the high-end guys or the low-end guys or medium, do you think they do anything in the next 2 weeks?
Yeah, I don't know if they do anything or not. I'm really intrigued. I know this for sure. You watch teams try and half-ass change or sort of a tear down and rebuild sort of thing, that never seems to work. I really wonder how they feel about Gibbons. I know that they've just recently re-upped pretty much everyone involved from a coaching staff standpoint, but I really wonder behind the scenes, where are they with that sort of notion with Gibbons? And you look at a guy like Jose Bautista, who turns 37 in October, 230. He's got you 16 dingers. He's basically useless if he needs to run to the ball in the outfield sort of thing. And I really wonder, how many more years does Jose Bautista get? Like, they're talking about him possibly going somewhere and playing a sort of role possibly. I really wonder the whole Jose Bautista thing, and I wonder if they should have been more aggressive to move on from him specifically this season.
Golden sombrero for him last night.
Oh, he was terrible at the plate.
Do they make a trade?
I think the two he kind of mentioned there, Estrada and Bautista, are the ones that I think you have to make those moves if you're the Blue Jays. The other ones, unless someone blows you away, I don't know. Maybe those are more off-season deals.
Voice of the Jets, Paul Edmonds, next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and the Walt Morris Group of Companies, including Winnipeg Dodge, present the first ever TSN 1290 Golf for Kids Classic, Tuesday, August 15th at Southwood Golf and Country Club. It's a Texas Scramble Best Ball Tourney with proceeds to benefit the Children's Hospital Foundation of Manitoba and Kidsport Manitoba. Registration is $150 per person or $500 per foursome. Includes 18 holes of golf, cart rental, pre- and post-game buffet-style food and drink, freebies, plus chances to win cool prizes. There will also be fun planned for select holes throughout the course, hosted by the Pint Winnipeg, Royal Sports, Santa Lucia Pizza, J&M Window and Door Company, Darcy Bain Physiotherapy, Windeck Limited, Ashley Furniture, Mr. Lube, FXR Adrenaline Unlimited, Viscount Gord Hotel, United Firefighters of Winnipeg Local 867, Star Building Supplies, and Avalon Foundation Repair. Space is limited and available on a first-come, first-served basis. Register now at tsn1290.ca. This is The Big Show with Jim Troy and Brandon, 34 minutes past the hour. And we welcome into the program the voice of the Winnipeg Jets, Mr. Paul Edmonds. And this segment with Paul is brought to you by Gauthier Chevrolet on McPhillips. This month at Gauthier, 20% off is back on select vehicles. Plus, buy a new or used vehicle and get a trip to Vegas. Gauthier Chevrolet, 1400 McPhillips at Inkster. Mr. Edmonds, how are you this fine morning?
Fine. Outstanding morning. It'll be sunny, warm, and humid. Just yes. The way we like it in southern Manitoba.
Perfect for cutting grass.
Yeah.
That's the way I like it, too.
Yeah.
We'll start with your thoughts on J.C. LaPon and his one-year, two-way deal for $650,000.
Well, again, I mean, you know, no risk for the organization. I think they like J.C. He didn't get an opportunity to play with the big club last year, but the year before he came up for a little while and didn't look out of place. I think he impressed to the point where they probably see him as a fourth-line guy. So I would say that between J.C. LaPon and Brendan Lemieux, there's probably an opportunity to push into that fourth line role and provide a little bit of that grit, that sandpaper that the Winnipeg Jets will probably need on that fourth line now with the departure of Chris Thorburn. So, you know, a guy they wanted to keep in the organization. I know that they liked him at Manitoba Moose level. They like him as a player, like him as a person. So again, you know, one more year to see what he can do, and he gets to stay in a place where he knows he's going to be, whether that's with the Jets or with the Moose. He's not from very far away, and just the province next door. So, you know, it's kind of close to home. It works out well for everybody. But I do honestly believe that there's an opportunity for a guy like J.C. LaPon to kind of enter into the NHL on a full-time basis this year, because I think there's spots down on the depth chart on the forward core that guys like him could push into and play a role for the team that, well, I think we would all argue argue very shortly that has a very good top six, maybe some of the best in the league. So, you know, there's opportunities in the third and fourth line, particularly in the fourth line. And I think J.C. LaPon or Brendan Lemieux would be a good fit there. And it's just a matter of what they're going to do at training camp and how they seize those opportunities.
Lemieux and J.C. LaPon probably sit outside of most people's starting Jets group of 12 forwards. Paulie, with your understanding, could the Jets really use an agitator, or does maybe that individual already exist with the Jets core, and maybe a guy like Adam Lowry if he decided to take on more of that role?
No, I think that they could probably use a guy like that. And again, I mean, this isn't an agitator role that's going to develop into, you know, your resident tough guy. I think that we are all on the same page when we tell the listeners that that tough guy role has kind of gone the way of the dodo, or certainly is going very quickly or rapidly.
Like more Gallagher-esque, right? As opposed to, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. But I mean, listen, you still have to have a guy that can skate and keep up that way. But yeah, for sure, a Brendan Gallagher type player and provides a little bit of offense and can get under your skin and go out there and kind of do some chirping or finish a check or just make sure that somebody knows that you're coming to finish that last body check after somebody's released the puck. I don't think that you really want Adam Lowry going out and doing that per se as his role. I think that Adam can be a real good center in the third line hole. Certainly a face-off winner, a guy that's hard to move in front of the net, that can move the puck into your own zone and distribute. A guy that maybe you want on the power play in front of the net because of that size. So I think that he's already established his role, but you can use that that grinder, sandpaper, kind of get under your skin kind of guy in the fourth role. And there's opportunities, as I suggested, that I think those two guys in the two guys that we've mentioned can move in to fill that role, because I think, honestly, the Winnipeg Jets with Chris Thorburn now gone are devoid of a guy or two like that on the depth chart when you start to get down toward the fourth line.
Paul Edmonds, the voice of the Jets on TSN 1290, joining us on the big show this morning, 39 minutes past the hour. Paul, are you concerned at all with this arbitration case with Connor Hellebuyck? And I'm talking along the lines of, you know, sometimes these get nasty if they actually go to an arbitration.
No, I would say that it would have been shocking if you don't know the rules of it or what's the allowance. I mean, he's earned the arbitration rights. We've established that certainly on the station. It's well within his rights to exercise those. What it tells me is the organization, the player, are very far apart when it came to their initial negotiations, and they need a third party to help out. I don't know, you know, what the comparables would be, because that's where we're going to look at this, and or at least the arbiter is, and going to say, okay, it's one or the other here. In hockey, you basically try to get toward the middle. It's not one or the other like baseball in arbitration, but you try to meet in the middle or get a little bit closer, or it's going to be a little bit closer to what somebody's proposed in terms of the financial value of what the contract should be. I'm not surprised from that standpoint that they've got this far and that the camp of Connor Hellebuyck has decided to exercise the arbitration rights. I'm just not quite sure what the number that Connor Hellebuyck and his agent are after here and why it's so far apart from what the Winnipeg Jets have maybe offered. Because when it comes to the comparables, certainly the Hellebuyck camp has gotten a few tangible comparables, but the Winnipeg Jets have as well. So everybody's working sort of off, you know, some history or what's out there right now. So to be that far apart is a little bit surprising to me. But nonetheless, I mean, they're going to go through this, so we'll see where it ends up. There's still the opportunity, of course, and I would imagine that this arbitration hearing is going to be held in August sometime, but nobody's made any announcement that they still have an opportunity to get this done beforehand. But it certainly, if it doesn't and they get to the arbitration case, it will probably lead to a little bit of angst within the organization between the player and the team and vice versa. These things always do. But time will heal all wounds, of course, and you move along, and hopefully it's a contract that that both are palatable with and that makes Connor Hellebuyck just kind of forget about what went on and go and play hockey. But, you know, he's had a couple of okay years. I mean, his rise through to what was basically the number one opportunity last year was pretty quick. It was a very, very rapid ascent. But, you know, I mean, I wouldn't say that he stumbled along the way here, but he didn't provide the goaltending that the team needed. And therefore, it was a little bit of a setback for him. And I don't know what kind of numbers he's asking, but obviously it's grand, and it's a little bit more than the Winnipeg Jets feel that he's worth. So this whole thing has not surprised me, other than I wonder what the numbers are, and that's why we've got to where we are. But these situations are never really good, because you go in there, and as the organization, you're going to say all of the flaws and defaults that that the player has, and then the player's going to kind of do the exact same thing on the other side and tell you how great he is. And sometimes in those types of negotiations, things can kind of come out a little bit afterward and last a little bit longer. But it's about money. It's about a business. I think everybody understands that, and everybody knows that going in, and whatever will be will be. But I'll be interested to see if they have a deal before August, what that deal is, and then we'll be able to kind of understand where they were kind of going at each other leading up to it, or if it does rest in the arbiter's hands, what he or she decides.
A source informed me that you were tearing it up pretty good with Bill Murray at the ESPYs after parties that were going on.
Nice.
Still enjoying the Cubs victory. But we won't get into that too much, Paulie. But I want to ask you, do you think that the Cubs surge here post All-Star break to capture the National League Central still?
Well, they've won four in a row. It seems that to me their hitting was never really a problem. You know, they've Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo and others that have really contributed to the offense over the years. I know that there was some talk about when the break happened that some of the older guys were really kind of happy that that the break was coming because they had played a lot of baseball and a lot of pressures after you win, and there's a bit of that hangover. And I think that, you know, they've come out of the break here after the All-Star break and won four in a row and played real good baseball. The trouble spot for me was their starting rotation, and it seems like it's kind of settled down a little bit. Of course, John Lackey's hurt now, but John Lester seems to be pitching a little bit better. And, you know, Jake Arrieta was just human with a 4.5 ERA leading up to the All-Star break. And if you can get him back to his form from 2 years ago or even last year, you'll be in a much better spot. But, you know, the whole thing is Joe Maddon, too. He's been through this before where he's had really good teams, and he's kind of a hands-off guy, and he knows that you've still got 81 games to go when you come out of the All-Star break, so let's ride this thing out before you start to put pressure on people. And as a championship team, all of a sudden they've kind of found their form and realized that you have to kind of now kick into another gear here with 80 games left or now into the 70s. But can they win the division again is your question? Well, they're going to be challenged by Milwaukee because Milwaukee, I think, has been, in a lot of respects, the surprise of certainly the National League, if not Major League Baseball. They've got a real good, well-rounded team. They've got a superstar in Gene Segura, who, if healthy, I think is as good a middle infielder as anybody has in the league. The problem with him is I think he's landed on two DL stints this year. But, you know, that's going to be a real good battle down the stretch. And those two cities are only about an hour and a half apart geographically. So, you know, there's a good rivalry there. And then if not, then you're going to really have an opportunity for a wild card spot, although they're, I think, further, that being the Cubs, out of the wild card than they are from catching Milwaukee. But, you know, Chicago's got a good chance. But Milwaukee is legit, and they are for real. So this isn't, you know, some kind of facade that they've created up in Brewerland there to kind of just kind of hold off the Chicago Cubs till the beginning of September and then they fade. I think that this is going to be a real good two-horse race right down the stretch here to see who wins the division. And then the other part of that is, too, whoever doesn't win the division wants to make sure they're playing real good baseball again to close the gap on that wild card. But I think the Cubs have found their stride to answer your question, Westy, and this should be a real good push toward the playoffs and end of September to see if they can get back in again and defend their title.
We only have a minute left, Paul, but wanted to ask you, do you think the Jays make a move in the next 2 weeks?
Well, I think they have to one way or another. I don't think they can sit status quo. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean moving Jose Bautista or somebody else that you don't mind parting with that you're pretty deep on the depth chart with? I don't think you add a piece now. I thought, you know, when we were talking about this before the All-Star break, and we thought maybe D. Gordon would be a good fit. Well, they've stumbled and kind of rumbled their way since the All-Star break. And it's just too far gone. Too many teams to climb over. Some that are still very faithful here to the Blue Jays would say there's still a chance for the wild card. And I guess there is based on the number of games that they're behind. But I think they make a move to probably divest themselves of a player as opposed to bringing somebody on. That would be my guess, guys.
Always a pleasure and good to hear from you. Should be interesting on both the rest of the offseason and, of course, the baseball season as well. Thanks for doing this, Paul. Enjoy the grass cutting.
Yeah, my pleasure, JT. We'll see you guys. Talk to you later.
Thanks so much, Pablo.
We will take a break and get into NHL news and notes when the Big Show continues on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and Robertson College present the return of the 10K Summer Selfie. Once again, we have $10,000 in cash prizes towards select selfie takers across Manitoba. And you could be one of the recipients to enter. Take a really good selfie at some point during the summer and post it before Thursday, August 31st, to Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram using the hashtag 10K Summer Selfie. Show us an amazing photo or take a themed selfie in one of five bonus categories. Your picture could be worth at least $1,000. Our favorite picks in each of the below categories will be selected and revealed Tuesday, September 5th. Keep your phone charged and be ready to capture the best that summer 2017 has to offer. Here are the selfies we're looking for. Selfie of the Summer, presented by Robertson College, has a $5,000 prize that comes with it. Best Animal Selfie, presented by Assiniboia Park Zoo, is worth a $1,000 prize, as are Best Food and Drink Selfie, presented by Booster Juice. Best Hair Selfie, presented by Aura Hair Group. Best Outdoor Selfie, presented by Lacoste Garden Center, and Best Smile Selfie, presented by Toddlers to Teens. For more information, once again, visit tsn1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki with you, rather, on the big show, TSN 1290. And this next segment is brought to you by Olympic Homes, and it is NHL News and Notes time. Gentlemen, Mr. Pageau in our nation's capital gets a three-year deal at $9.3 million. Your thoughts on that? Is that a good deal, good price for Mr. Pageau?
Well, sure had a nice run in the playoffs, huh? And who could ever forget the singing along to Pageau, 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 Pageau. But yeah, I think that's a pretty good deal, right? You get
3.1 cap hit.
3.1, 24 years old, a solid contributor. It's I think that's good for both parties.
Yeah, he's a good little player. And it seems like the game seems to improve once it comes playoff time. He's had a couple of good playoff runs now with the Sens, and 33 points and 43 points over the past two seasons. That's kind of middle six numbers there. So, yeah, I think it's a fair deal for everyone.
It reminds me of Perreault's contract when he first came to Winnipeg. Three-year, $9 million. Sort of came in, did the same sort of role, same sort of things. Had an interesting report this morning. Hockey Canada hopes to play a pre-Olympic friendly versus Russia in an exhibition match in Pyeongchang, where the Olympics are going to be.
Yeah, and I wonder, like, Hockey Canada interested in it, but that the why and the whatever of that, more or less, right? Like, whoop-de-doo. It's not the NHL players.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of scares me a little bit. If you're going to have, that's going to be their first exhibition match up against the team that's going to be by far the clear-cut number one favorite. I don't know how much interest it really holds in me. Like, it's kind of just it's a sexy matchup on paper when you hear Canada-Russia hockey, but if it's Kovalchuk and company up against, you know, second-tier players from the Euro Leagues and the KHL, it's just kind of, I don't know, it just sucks. It just kind of brings to light that there's not going to be the best of the best at the Olympics.
And also on NHL News and Notes, let's get into this all-time best Russian NHLers list. Explain. It's throughout the NHL?
Yes. Yeah, so
not just current.
Sport Express compiled a list of the 50 best Russian NHLers. So guys, like you said, Tretiak wouldn't be on the list, but I guess a quick top five. Malkin's number one. Fedorov number two. Ovi is number three, and then followed by Pavel Bure and Pavel Datsyuk.
Wait a minute, which Fedorov? Fedor?
I think it's Fedor.
Fedorov?
Oh, no, it's the Red Wings. It's Sergei.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. So top five, Malkin, Fedorov.
Ovi,
Ovechkin.
Pavel Bure and Pavel Datsyuk.
You agree with that? Did you put Datsyuk ahead of Bure?
Well, Datsyuk's a god to me. So would I personally? Yeah, probably. I'm more like Yashin. Yashin at 14 over, say, Larionov.
Ugh.
Seriously?
Yeah, I mean, Pavel Bure and Pavel Datsyuk are some of my all-time favorite players. So it's tough for me to try and put who I would have ahead of them. I mean, Bure was, I think we kind of forget now that his career's been over for a while, but he was almost booking 60 goals a year for about 4 or 5 years in a row. So you know, if he's healthy and he finishes out his career, does he get?
But can you say that? Can you have those buts when you're talking about greatness or best players?
But when it's injuries and it's taken from you, I think you can. And I mean, he almost had 500 goals in 700 games. So you're talking about one of the all-time prolific goal scorers in the NHL.
That is impressive.
Gino at number one's interesting, too, to me.
Over Ovi?
Over everyone.
Yeah.
You know,
Ovi's not going to be happy.
No. I'm kind of wondering if it's just solely, you know, the Stanley Cup thing that's keeping Ovi from number one. And Malkin,
which,
you know,
is so stupid.
From players I've seen live, there's been two players that I've been blown away with physically compared to all the other NHLers on the ice, and Malkin is number one for me in terms of forwards, but I still think I'd have Ovi number one over him. The most skilled guy on the list might be Alexei Kovalev, but he just kind of wasted that away for the majority of his career, which is too bad.
Where's he on the list?
I think he's 11th or 12th.
Wow.
Well, yeah, Kovalchuk's 11.
Kovalchuk's 11, Kovalev's 12th.
Wow.
Kind of surprised how far down Kovalchuk is a little bit. And I don't know. I don't know how you have goalies like in the mix. You know, it's hard enough having forwards and defense all in the list, but when you're talking about all time best NHLers, how in the world do you? It's tough, man. When you start having all the different positions sort of in this stew of NHLers, that's a real tough thing to start to distinguish.
Well, we'll get your thoughts on that list as well when we open the Boss Pizza fan line at 9 o'clock. But up next, Milt Stegall joins us, tee up the Bombers, and talk about the next week coming up in the CFL on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is a proud supporter of the 5th Annual Stars for Special Golf Tournament, Tuesday, August 23rd at Glendale Golf and Country Club. It's a Texas Scramble-style tournament with proceeds going to Special Olympics Manitoba. Lots of fun throughout. Each team is assigned a celebrity golfer to play with for 9 holes. Includes dinners, draws, and a silent auction, and much more. For more details, visit specialolympics.mb.ca. The Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. And our previous segment was a presentation of Olympic Homes. Get an Olympic coach in your corner and build with confidence. Visit them online at olympichomes.ca. Jim Tolth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruicki, and we welcome back into the program Blue Bomber great and a big part of the CFL on TSN, Mr. Milt Stegall. How are you today?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Good, thank you. We were discussing earlier the debate you had with Matt Dunnigan about who is the best team in the Canadian Football League right now. Just let our listeners know why you think it's the BC Lions.
Well, I mean, I like the way they handled themselves with the early season travel they had to do, and they just weren't traveling, you know, to Edmonton or Calgary is a lot closer to them. They were traveling to the East Coast. You know, those first two games, they had to stay over on the East Coast, so they didn't. That didn't allow them to go back home and settle into their own surroundings, you know, stay in their own apartments, have their own practice facilities. And they were able to overcome that, then traveled back to BC, then came back to Hamilton and faced some early adversity, starting quarterback getting hurt on the first offensive play, and Lou Lay stepping in and doing a great job. So, and I know they lost to Edmonton that first game, but in my opinion, I think they are the most balanced, the best team right now in the CFL.
Would you agree, Milt, that Bomber fans that feel that maybe BC's vulnerable now with a healthy Travis Lule, they're greatly mistaken? He looks like he's still more than capable of doing a great job.
Well, he's definitely capable. You have to take into consideration he was going against that Hamilton defense, and, I mean, that's not saying much. I think they've given up over 1,500 yards total with their defense. But he still looked pretty good. You know, they didn't miss a beat. Kahari Jones being our offensive coordinator, they have some weapons there. So they got him going, and they look pretty good. It's going to be more of a challenge going against Winnipeg. A lot better defense than that Hamilton's defense. So we'll see how good he is come this week.
Job-wise, Milt, who's in danger in Hamilton? Is it Kent Austin? Is it Jeff Reinbold at the defense? What's going on there, and who do you think is on the hot seat?
Well, right now I think it's the players. You know, I don't think they'll do anything with Jeff Reinbold or Ken Austin right now. I don't think so, especially not Ken. I think it's the players. You know, they're waiting for their two all-star halfbacks to get back. But I think they'll make some changes, you know, before those guys come back, because they just don't have the talent right now. He's still an elite quarterback, I believe, but he doesn't have enough talent around him. They don't have a big go-to receiver. Their defensive backs can't cover. They're missing a couple offensive linemen. I mean, their water boys is even bad there. So they have to make some changes with their personnel on the field. But I think right now, Reinbolt, Ken Alston, and I think Tillman, I think they're okay for right now.
Milt, for your money, who's the best receiver in the CFL?
For my money? You know what? For my money, I would go with Roosevelt. I like what Dressler is doing, but I would go with Naaman Roosevelt in Saskatchewan. I think he can do it all. He's a tough receiver. He can make that big catch. He doesn't mind going across the middle, but he'll also get you down the field and make that big play. So I know the Winnipeg fans don't like that, but I got to give my honest opinion. I would go with Naaman Roosevelt right now.
What about Karen was the hashtag he started. Are you happy with the way the CFL sort of handled that?
Yeah, I'm happy. I mean, there was no right or wrong way to handle that. I mean, unless you were going to give her $1 million, which you can't do. So, I mean, I like the consolation prizes, as they call them. But, you know, you can't make up for that mistake that was made. That was, you know, outright a mistake that should never have been called in a million years. That was one of the worst calls I've ever seen in my life. But, you know, they gave her some going-away prizes, as they call them. And I think she's happy. I'm for sure, you know, they'll try to do some other things with her, maybe some surprises, some great cut, but you can't make up for $1 million that she should have had in her hand.
But the Bombers were following that game against the Argos. Prior to that, of course, the disappointment in that game with Calgary, and they come out and are kind of up in the air and questionable in the first half. How impressed were you with what the Bombers accomplished in the second half of that Toronto game to put everything together and pull out the win?
That's a good sign. You know, things are always going to go your way, and a true championship team is going to be determined about how they overcome adversity. And that was very impressive by the Bombers, what they were able to do to come away with that victory. We saw what happened, like you said, in the second half of that Calgary game where they just looked bad. They couldn't score a point, couldn't even get in position where their best field goal kicker in the game could kick a field goal. So that was a good comeback for them against Toronto. Hopefully they can carry that momentum when they face the BC team, because I think that BC team overall is even better than Calgary or Toronto. So it's going to be a task for them come Friday.
What do you think the keys are in that matchup going into this, given that Lule's in and what the Bombers got accomplished against Toronto, Milt?
Well, I think they just have to be consistent. You know, don't have a great first half, don't have a great second half. Just be consistent throughout the game. I don't know if we've seen that yet early on in the season for them. You know, one game early, good in the first half, bad in the second half, vice versa. Just be consistent all four quarters, and they have a chance to compete with anybody. They have talent. You see they can score in many ways, not just on offense, good special teams. We know that defense is going to continue creating turnovers. So just be consistent throughout the game, and they can compete and possibly beat anyone.
Milt, your thoughts on what the CFL, maybe the state of officiating here with the CFL, with the reviews and the on-field product, and what the CFL can maybe put into effect to make it a little bit better for the players?
Man, I wish I had the answer to that. It's going to be difficult because as a player, I used to always say to the refs, just be consistent. So I know, okay, you're going to call pass interference this way. So I know what I can and can't get away with. That's all players want is consistency, so they know what they can and cannot do. We haven't received that. We haven't received that last year. We haven't received that this year. So we don't know what's going to be called, when it's going to be called, what you can do, what you can't do, and that's part of the problem. I know it's difficult when you're talking about part-time guys. You know, this is not their full-time job. They're not making enough money. Maybe if they made it full-time, that's going to be difficult because you have to pay these guys a lot of money. That would make it easier, but just have consistency, which we haven't had. So if they can get that, I think everyone would be happy.
Milt Stegall, a former Blue Bomber great, and of course a big part of CFL on TSN, is where you can watch him weekly on TSN and TSN.ca, joining us on the big show, TSN 1290, 12 minutes past the hour. What are your thoughts on the Rouge, Milt? Remind us.
I hate it. I hate the Rouge. I can't stand it. There's no. I've lost games and I've won games on missed field goals on the rules, which I think is very unfortunate. I think it should be taken out of the game. I know it's been part of the game forever, and I know I've only been involved in the CFL since 1995, but I can't stand the rules. I can't. You shouldn't be rewarded for not being successful, and that's what you're being rewarded for. I know it's part because, you know, you want the guy to bring the guy the ball out of the end zone, but I can't stand that rule. I never will. You could brainwash me, and I still won't like the rules.
Mill, I'm just looking at what the Alouettes have done so far this year, and there's, you know, some change there, so it's going to take a little while for them to get going, mostly offensively. But you look in week one, they escape with victory at home over Saskatchewan in a game that they probably should have lost, and then go and lose a real tight one to Edmonton in week two, and follow that up with a tight loss in BC, and then they come home and take care of business against Calgary. Are the Montreal Alouettes better than people think?
I think they are better. They could be great if that offense gets together. It's truly amazing defensively what they're able to do. They were amazing last year, but they decided this year we're gonna devote all our money to offense and drop all the big guys on defense. So I thought their defense was going to suffer. You know, they had older guys like Tyrus A. Bear and Chip Cox, but those guys are still getting it done on defense. Now we saw what they can be when Darian Durant and they get going on offense. So if they get going on offense, some consistency, they don't have to be great. They don't have to be lights out. They just have to be consistent, put up 25, 30 points a game, somewhere around there, and they could be the best team in the CFL, in my opinion, because that defense is amazing. They are a good team, but they could be great if Darian Durant at offense gets going. It's going to be scary if they do. We saw a little bit of it that last week, but if they can be better than that, they could be the best team in the CFL, in my opinion.
Milt, Edmonton's 3-0 and have won 3-0 by a combined 9 points. The Ottawa Redblacks are 0-3-1 and have lost or not won a game by a combined 7 points. Do you see the parity in the league, and are you happy where it's at overall?
Well, I'm happy. It would be nice if Hamilton and Ottawa had some more victories, but Ottawa, they're right there. They're, as I like to say, Ottawa, they're a couple of plays away from having victories. It's just a problem with Hamilton. They're players away from having victories. But the parity is good. The games, for the most part, have been close, and that's what we ask for, close, entertaining games. Of course, you would like more victories from some teams, but that's just the way it is. I think those teams will eventually come on and things will balance out. It wasn't like it was last year with Calgary, which is rolling over everyone. I don't think that's going to happen this year. I think people are starting to catch up with Calgary. You saw what Montreal was able to do. You see what other teams are able to do. I think teams are catching up with the better teams. So across the board, for the most part, I think all 9 teams are right there, evenly matched up, and we'll just have to wait until what happens in the rest of the season.
Appreciate your time, as always, Mel. Thanks for doing this, and enjoy the rest of your week.
All right, thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Turtle Man.
Okay.
What do you think of the Rouge?
Well, it adds some level of excitement in games when you're talking about needing to get the ball out of the end zone sometimes on a missed field goal, and when the other team puts out their kickout team, like sometimes it can lead to some pretty interesting things. And I do, when people say, but you have failed on the field goal, I understand that, but the ball still being pushed down the field, and that's why you're getting the point, because the other team, you know, you accomplish getting moving the ball down the field, so you get some level of award. I'm kind of indifferent to it, but I think that it adds just enough oomph as a peculiar little part of the Canadiana of CFL football that I like it and I think it should stay.
It is kind of funny, though, that when are the only two times you get the single point? Either a missed field goal or a misplaced punt.
Or a kickoff.
So two out of the three, you're rewarded incompetence.
But it's not always a misplaced punt, man. Sometimes you go for the single.
Yeah, but for the most part, right? It's generally because you try the coffin corner and it kind of rolls in. It doesn't really bother me, but it is kind of... It's quirky. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but it doesn't really bother me.
And sometimes quirky is... Like, there are probably a handful of things quirky that exist in the CFL that help to make it that much different from the NFL. And I don't know if that helps or hurts the situation, but certainly quirky is a nice way to put it, yeah.
I don't like it. I'm the same way. I mean, I understand the quirkiness of it. I understand what you're saying. Like, it's kind of a unique intricacy of the Canadian Football League. I agree too that, you know, especially the majority of them come on a missed field goal. And I just think you're rewarding failure, like Milt and Brandon and everybody said already. So we'll get your thoughts on that as well on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 9 o'clock. Still to come, Jason Cole going to talk some NFL. Lots going on in the National Football League at the bottom of the hour. But we'll take a break and have more Big Show for you when we come back on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is proud to support the fifth and final HSC Foundation Celebrity Human Race. It's your chance to race around Winnipeg, competing in challenges and puzzles with your team celebrities. September 22nd and 23rd, the money raised allows the HSC Foundation to improve care for Manitoba families with research initiatives, cutting-edge medical equipment, state-of-the-art facilities. To learn more or to register, visit TSN1290.ca. Jim, Troy, and Brandon, and we have a pair of tickets to Super Spike this weekend, this Friday and Saturday at Maple Grove Rugby Park, 780-1290. The 12th caller through will get a pair of tickets to this weekend's Super Spike. Always a great event at the Maple Grove Rugby Park. We were talking Jays earlier, gentlemen, and Buster Olney was on one of our affiliate TSN radio stations this morning, and he talked about why the Jays should look at trading Roberto Osuna.
I think that there's no more volatile performer in baseball than the relief pitcher. They go up, they go down, they have good years. At the end of this season, Osuna will have 3 years of service time. He goes into arbitration. He starts to get more expensive. In other words, as that happens, his value goes down. And, you know, if the Jays wind up doing some sort of a measured sell-off or, you know, an extensive sell-off, then they probably have to know internally that their chances for winning next year are probably going to be reduced somewhat. If that's the case, hey, put Osuna out there. Put Stroman out there. See what you can get for value right now.
What do you think of that? 22 well, years old.
I guess when you're talking, he frames it pretty well to make a whole bunch of sense, right? And I guess when you're talking what degree, Shapiro, is it going to be measured or extensive? It makes sense when he frames it the way he does for as far as what your salary and everything else coming into play, and you're certainly not going to get Osuna any hotter than what he'd be right now.
Yeah, I
but
mean,
a gaping hole it would leave.
Oh, like the thing about closers are, and it's interesting to me because if you have one, like you always think somebody else could fill in, and if you don't have one, you can't. Like I'm looking at St. Louis, I'm looking at the Washington Nationals. You just traded to get two guys from the A's, top-notch team, and just can't find a closer. But yet other teams like Toronto have one, and yet you think that, you know, when Osuna had to go down, they had some other guys step in. It's such an interesting position. But at that age, at 22, and the price is going to go up, and because of that age, mm-hmm. It'd be very interesting what you could get for him. And I, you know, even Colorado, the guy who leads saves in the major leagues of baseball is Greg Holland, coming off major surgery, took a year off. He's leading the league in saves in Colorado right now. He's struggling a little bit, giving up some bombs, giving up some runs. It's such an interesting position and in what you're willing to pay for it.
It's a dangerous time here for the Blue Jays from an organizational standpoint, right? When you're talking about the owner of the Blue Jays and like the relationship with the Blue Jays in that market was so lovey-dovey here for the last couple of years, and now you're talking about the potential of really completely eradicating, wiping out all these feel-goods here and all the feels that people have with, like, talk about Osuna. Why don't you just make a package deal, Osuna, Donaldson, and Stroman, and just bend over and kiss your butt goodbye? And then you start from absolute scratch, but you really wonder how big of a sell-off are we possibly looking at here with Shapiro? Like, what's he got going on?
Yeah, those three and all the goodwill you built up over the past 2 years would basically be the trade wherever they went. I don't know if the Osuna trade makes a lick of sense to me. And I get the whole reliever thing, but I mean, they were thinking of maybe using him as a starter at some point in the future. And I don't know. I mean, I know relievers can be volatile, but what is this now? This is the third year of Osuna as a closer, and there has been basically no hiccup so far from him. So I don't know if, to me, that makes no sense to me. Any kind of Osuna. At least I can look at Marcus Stroman, who I love and might be my favorite player on the team, but you can look at him and go, you know, up for free agency shortly, small pitcher, mm-hmm. value at an all-time high. Like, a trade like that makes sense to me. But Osuna, in 3 years, he'll be 25 years old. I don't know if you even entertain many offers for him.
What about the idea of getting Alex Bregman out of Houston for Josh Donaldson, who's in his early 30s? He's got 1 year left at $17 million and then becomes an unrestricted free agent. Bregman's 23 years old. He is currently batting .257. He has 8 home runs and is considered one of the top third base prospects. Would you and I'm not, because I'm an Astros fan, I have question marks about Bregman as an Astros fan. However, you get younger at the position. It's a top-notch prospect at that position. It's not going to cost you nearly as much as Donaldson. And I guess the reason you would do it is if you feel Donaldson is on the decline. If you could replace the defensive and the offensive numbers somewhat with potential, would you make a trade like that? Like, are that where the Jays are right now? Because I agree with the debate about the core, and if you're going to go trade guys, you're going to go trade guys to get, like, Stroman's and guys like that.
The question you asked, though, is the question. When you got a guy as dynamic a talent as Josh Donaldson might be here, turning 32 years old in December, where exactly are you regarding the organization? Organizationally, where are you? Upcoming here this offseason, because if you're in rebuild mode, then there's no question mm-hmm. whatsoever that Donaldson, the window, it just doesn't work out turning 32 years old.
Which is why I wanted this to happen before the year, but pick a direction and stick
go.
With it.
Yeah.
You want to compete, then compete. If you want to rebuild, then I'm okay with both ways.
The half-ass rebuild is just a long, slow death. We've witnessed that in all kinds of sports.
And I say that because the Astros would also, they have a ton of high-end prospects, yeah. and you kick those in too. So you replace your third baseman starting, and then you get a couple extra prospects with that. I don't know if you don't make that deal, but who knows. Osuna's interesting as well. We'll get your thoughts on that in the Boss Pizza fan line. But up next, we're going to talk some NFL with our good friend Jason Cole on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is proud to present MTS Super Spike this weekend, July 21st and 22nd at Maple Grove Rudry Park. Headliners on the concert stage this year include the Sam Roberts Band, the Litex, the Treble, and more. Weekend passes for all shows are on sale now at superspike.ca, or keep listening to The Big Show this week for your chance to win tickets, including Rick Higgins, who just won a pair, courtesy of us here at TSN 1290, the good people at Super Spike. And Rick says he's going to give the tickets to his kid, Justin, his son, I guess. All proceeds from this year's event go to Volleyball Manitoba, Kids Sport Manitoba, and the True North Youth Foundation. More tickets coming up on that. You ever venture down a Super Spike?
I have.
You're busy on the weekends. But.
I have in years past. It is a fantastic event all the time, and I can't believe it. Sam Roberts is here, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's ridiculous, man. Sam Roberts is absolutely wicked in concert.
I'll ask you this. How long were you there before the tarp came off?
I think it's just more of a quick pop-in sort of a thing a couple times I've
so
gone.
30 seconds.
Yeah, so the tarp, yeah. The
30
tarp
seconds. I walked in with it off.
Yeah.
You go to Super Spike?
I was a little bit of a beach volleyball player back in the day. I haven't gone in. It's been too long.
How long till your top tarp came off?
I'm not a tarp. I'm not a tarp-off kind of guy.
Neither am I.
I like to keep things under wrap.
I just say that. Our good friend Darren Cameron from the Winnipeg Blue Bombers always goes to Super Spike, always brings a couple players down. And the over-under from Husser and I is always 28 to 30 seconds.
Yeah, I would think so. He's got the male model gig on the side too, right?
And then the tarp comes off, right off. Like,
Super Spike. You hope that's all that comes off. Right?
Yeah.
In the following hours. Yeah.
Super Spike this weekend. Sam Roberts Band on the Saturday night is a headliner once again, superspike.ca. Time to talk some NFL, and we like to do that with our good friend from the Bleacher Report, Mr. Jason Cole, how are you?
I'm very good. What's going on?
Not too much, but a lot in the NFL and a lot with contracts. And I guess we'll just start with Kirk Cousins. Kirk, don't call me Kurt Cousins. And what goes on with the Washington Redskins? Franchise tagged again, and now they're calling him out a little bit, throwing out the numbers and everything else.
Yep.
Where is this relationship going?
Nowhere. This got ugly yesterday. I mean, this was really bad form by the Redskins, because I think that they realize, you know, that he's not liking what he sees coming from the Washington end of this. So this got really problematic yesterday when Washington decided to publish their contract offers, or at least announce their contract offer, and paint it in a way that makes Kirk Cousins look greedy, essentially. That's a huge problem. I mean, you're calling your starting quarterback greedy on the eve of training camp, and when he's supposed to lead you, hopefully to the playoffs, you know, and you know, as far as you can possibly go. You know, this is not a way to get him to be bought in. So, I mean, I'll break it down. You know, $53 million sounds like a lot of money, and it is. It's a tremendous amount of money. But when you're already getting $24 million guaranteed, the remainder of that, about $29 million, you're going to get probably anyways as a transition tag next year. So this is not a lot of additional money for him to sign away 6 years of his career, because it would have been this year, next year, and then four more years that were none of which was guaranteed. So for Kirk Cousins, this deal that the Redskins offered makes no sense at all. Now, things could go backwards. Things could change. He could get hurt. He could have a really terrible year. You know, all sorts of things can happen. But Kirk Cousins is in a position where he's made $19 million last year. He's going to make $24 million this year. He's got $43 million that he's made. He can afford to play on house money. He can gamble a little bit and say, I'm going to play that I'm going to, you know, play well this year, and I'm going to go hit free agency, and I'm going to be great, and, you know, going to make another $60 million or $65 or $70 million in guaranteed money on the next contract, because he's in that kind of position. And so for Washington to do what it did, just it was a purely and simply and only a PR stunt to make Kirk Cousins look bad.
Jason, not sure what's going on south of the border here, but it seems anything Washington-related and dysfunction seem to walk hand-in-hand at this point in time. How much of this are you putting on Daniel Snyder?
Well, all of it. He runs the organization. I mean, look, everything revolves around your owner and how he chooses to operate the club. And, you know, sometimes you can forgive an owner, you know, maybe, you know, like Tom Benson at this point in time. He doesn't have all of his faculties. He's not in good physical condition. He's 90-something years old. That's not Dan Snyder, okay? Dan Snyder's not in that position. And, you know, if you want to look at great organizations start at the very top, you know, ownership. You know, you look at the Steelers, a consistent hand. You look at the Giants. You look at the Patriots. Even to a certain extent, Dallas, you know, which has not been successful necessarily on the field, but certainly from a financial standpoint has been tremendously successful, because that's how Jerry Jones makes sure that he runs things. He makes sure that, you know, from a business standpoint, they operate very, very well. That's what distinguishes great organizations. You know, is does the owner really, really keep track and lay the foundation for how the organization should be run?
Why can't the Steelers and Le'Veon Bell get a deal done?
Well, the $12 million starting point is too high for a running back.
Okay.
You know, the next best running back is making, I think, $9 million a year. I think that's LeSean McCoy, if I'm remembering correctly off the top of my head. And so to go to 12 is really is too much. Now, it's the franchise tag based primarily because Adrian Peterson's previous contract before he got cut was, I think, $16 million. And when they wrote the franchise tag for this year, it was based on that number, okay, as part of the overall average of the top five running backs in the game. So that made it disproportionately high. But if I'm Le'Veon Bell, I'm sitting here going, why should I settle for a contract that's much less than $12 million a year? This is what you are saying is my value, and I've got $12 million guaranteed in hand. If you're not handing me $25 to $30 million guaranteed, why shouldn't I do it? On the flip side, the Steelers are saying, look, we're not going to get much past $10 million a year on average, and we don't want to go much past, say, $20 to $25 million guaranteed because you have issues. You've got suspensions in your past. You've got some injuries in your past. You never played a full season. You know, we're not sure we can trust you on multiple levels, even though we acknowledge that you're a star player. So there's just, you're caught in between here where the franchise tag in this case is the best solution.
Jason, when you look at the intricacies and the impact of paying your quarterback, you look at a guy like Joe Flacco maybe and what has happened with the Ravens since that contract was signed. Maybe look at how Drew Brees kind of holds the organization hostage with his contract and how they just can't pay enough talent around him to complement what he brings to the table. What are your thoughts on that relationship with you know, giving the quarterback so much money and teams not being able to do very much after that point? It's a very interesting situation in the NFL.
Pick better players. You know, draft better. That's a classic argument that runs in favor of management. Management is like, oh, just take less. Really, that's your solution because you're not clever enough to go draft good enough players. You know, you have to take money from the guy who has the toughest and most important job on the field and takes a ton of hits and, you know, where everybody on defense is trying to kill him. I mean, I'm not trying to make it worse than other jobs like being offensive line, but that guy's critical. You know, we all talk about it. It's a quarterback league. You got to have a special guy. You got to do this. You got to do that. That's all true. But when you get that guy, you got to pay him. And I know Tom Brady has taken less along the way. Peyton Manning didn't, and they won. He made it to Super Bowls. Other guys have won. I mean, I just think that it's a crock argument that just plays into the hand of management to say, hey, we need to pay less money for our quarterback so that everybody else can make a little more. Now, what you need to do is you need to consistently make sure that you take care of players in advance and recognize talent and have good personnel people so that you can make up for your mistakes along the way and that you know, don't depend on the player to have to make up for what you can't do well.
Jason Cole from the Bleacher Report talking NFL with us this morning on The Big Show, TSN 1290, 43 minutes past the hour. How concerned are you, and how concerned should Cowboys fans be with Ezekiel Elliott?
Well, I'm not any more or less concerned than I was before this. I mean, I've always known, you know, in talking to people, that Ezekiel Elliott has, you know, some maturity issues. And I'm not saying that he punched anybody, because there's the latest witness says he didn't. But certainly some fracas involving him or his people got started. And that's all a reflection upon him. And if you've talked to people around that organization, they'll tell you, the minute he got drafted last year, he was partying in Dallas and living a almost out-of-control lifestyle. You know, before that, he had the incident in South Florida with a girlfriend, okay? You know, and we don't know exactly what that was, but he may end up getting suspended as a result of it for a game or two, probably. Who knows what's going to ultimately happen in all of that. So you've got a kid who, again, not the most professional kid in the world, and all signs point to a guy who's probably going to have a very short career. It may be a spectacular career. It's spectacular so far. He can play, but it may not last long unless he gets this under control. And so I felt that way before yesterday. I feel that way after yesterday. And it hasn't changed. This is just further confirmation of what a lot of us know out there and what the Cowboys kind of grudgingly admit in private.
Does Johnny Manziel ever step on an NFL field again with a team?
Overwhelmingly, I would say no. I think that there are an awful lot of people who are encouraged. Like, I think that what was put out there was, Johnny's probably talked to a couple of people in the NFL, said, hey, kid, get your act together, and, you know, we're all for you, and, you know, we'd love to see you play again. That is a long, long way from, hey, are you in shape? We're ready to sign you. Like, that, those are two very different things. Is he getting encouragement from people? Sure. I mean, I would encourage the kid. You know, you want to see somebody succeed. You don't want to see somebody fail. But the anybody implying, including Johnny, implying that, you know, anybody in the NFL is waiting for him to come back is simply not true. Number one, they don't know if he's got control of his life. Number two, most people in the league look and say, I don't even know if the kid can play. You know, he's a nice college player. It doesn't really work in the pros the way he plays.
Interesting week in the National Football League, and, of course, training camps right around the corner. Jason, always a pleasure. We thank you for this, and enjoy the rest of your week.
No problem. Take care, guys. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Jason.
You think Manziel ever plays again?
No. No, but I am paying acute attention to the whole, you know, the whole thing as it's the Kaepernick thing, and now Manziel talking about possibly being interested in coming back or doing what he needs to come back, and the Kaepernick still being on the outside looking in. It's just amazing to me, that whole Kaepernick thing. It's so ridiculous.
And what do you think of the story around Kaepernick that he didn't read the playbook enough and didn't know all the plays? And
I mean, it could be true.
That's not why he's not
in.
Yeah, we all know that. Come on.
Troy's right.
No, I know that's not why, but it adds to the point of, if this is part of it and that's part of it.
It's not a part thing. There's only one reason. And I understand why, right? Like, I understand as a professional athlete, the organization involved just wants you to play the sport, man. Just keep your mouth shut and play the sport. Stay away from all that stuff. I completely understand that, but it's a good lesson for a bunch of other athletes to know your role. Right? You got to understand. You don't bring controversy with you in that manner, especially with things such a sensitive thing. And it's great. Hey, if you want to basically be a messiah in a way and give your profession away or your occupation away because you believe so strongly in things, then I tip my hat to that. But if you want to take that on as an athlete, know that it may well get to a point or affect you in a way that you never get to play the game again because your organizations just don't want to have to deal with that, especially on such a sensitive issue, although I think he's basically a saint for what he's done.
Yeah, I mean, because you look at the numbers he put up, even last year in San Francisco, and they weren't outstanding, but compare them to some of the guys that are getting signed around the league, and you tell me what the issue is.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, I know what the issue is. But
I'm not saying specifically.
Yeah, you guys understand, though, even if there was three teams that go, well, let's look at this, and then they add on that the stories that he didn't study the playbook enough and he didn't know it, then that's just another added aspect to it.
He's your backup quarterback, though, not your starter.
That is such a late emerging story, too. I think it's just a bunch of crap to take away from the true story of this that everybody knows the truth.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll tee up the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290 at 9 o'clock. That's next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Stream us on the iHeartRadio app and all your favorite devices. Get a customized playlist to suit your mood or activity. Your music, your station's always free. Download the iHeartRadio app today and stream on The Big Show. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruicki. And it may be sad but true, but we're going to open the Boss Pizza fan line at 780-1290 at 9 o'clock.
Devil horns up, everybody.
Lots to talk about. Did you guys see the outfield in Detroit after the Metallica concert?
Woo! Decimated.
That That did not go well for the outfield at Tiger Stadium in Detroit, but well worth it, I'm told. Well, looked like our front yard
the summer. I just said, told trade friends, you guys play as much as you want on the front yard, man, and it was, oh.
My father has an immaculate yard. It's talked about all over Lethbridge.
I've never really understood that, man.
My friends have always said that. Like, even I'll hear from a buddy on my birthday, and he goes, "By the way, your dad's lawn looks amazing again this year. I don't know how he does it."
Humans and the grass thing is just weird. Like, go play on it, man. If anytime I see beautiful lawn like that, I think, boy, that would feel good just to tear around on playing either soccer or football.
The only reason I mow my lawn is because my neighbors basically shame me.
Oh yeah,
right. Like theirs are all immaculate. Mine, like, once it gets a little too disgusting, it's okay. I'll behave a little bit, idiot.
Wow, the Colin Kaepernick discussion has sparked some questions on Twitter. 4 notifications already about Kaepernick. We'll talk about that on the Boston Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290 if you want. Let's start with Jonathan Jennings of the BC Lions. MRI comes back, no structural damage to his shoulder, but he is out week to week. Travis Lule will be at the helm of the BC Lions. Does that change anything for you and what you expect from the Lions when facing the Bombers Friday night?
Not a dang thing. You got a guy who has got all the veteran savvy in the world, a guy that's been on the sidelines watching this young stud carry the organization, a guy that hasn't really been healthy for the years up to this point in time. That shoulder took a long time to heal, and now he's back and truly at 100%. Travis Lule is dangerous in a huge way and could probably carry this BC Lions team to a Grey Cup similar to how Jonathan Jennings could, so long as he doesn't get banged around a whole bunch. Right, but that's kind of the key here. Go get to him, cause the trouble. But when you talk about capability, escapability, absolute complete comprehension and knowledge of the playbook, Travis Lule has got it all.
JC LaPon gets a new contract, a 1-year two-way deal worth $650K. You like the deal?
Yeah, I'm indifferent to it. JC LaPon, I like his style of play, but it's just hard to for a guy like that. And you know, Paul Edmonds talked about that the Jets could really use that sort of like an agitator guy, productive along the lines of a Gallagher-esque type of guy who's got all kinds of, like, that's the thing. And these days in the NHL, the all the agitators have skill coming out of their ears. So do the Jets have someone like that? Not really, right?
Not yet.
Yeah,
not yet.
So it's hard to imagine him getting into the top 12.
I think Brandon Lemieux was kind of the hope, but he hasn't produced at the AHL level yet either. So I think it's still waiting. But, I mean, hey, he certainly can be a good energy guy for the Moose, but I don't expect him having a role with the Jets this year.
And the lines for the Jets, I got Ehlers, Scheifele, Wheeler, Perreault, Little, Laine, Connor, Lowry, Armia, Matthias, Kopp, Dano, Morrissey, Trouba, Kulikov, Byfuglien, Enstrom, Meyer, Steve Mason starting, Hellebuck backing up. You guys?
Yeah, there's quite an array that you can get. Ultimately, when we're doing the lines here, I would love to see Connor get a chance in a protected type role, ideally in top six if possible. I put him down in lines that I would like to see as opposed to lines I think the Jets kick out Connor, Little, Wheeler. But I'd really like to see Patan get a good, honest opportunity to make this club.
I think he'll have an opportunity. I just don't have him making it.
Well, in my iteration, I have him getting that opportunity. And I'd like to see him get a chance with Scheifele and Wheeler. I know, you know, going from the fourth line in press box to the first line doesn't happen a whole lot. But look what Connor Sheary did when he got his chance with the Penguins. What Jake Guentzel did when he got his chance with the Penguins. A small, skilled guy playing with other skilled guys. If he can't perform with Scheifele and Wheeler, then yeah, okay. You gave him his chance and you can move forward with them. But if you're able to get solid production out of Nick Patan there, then the rest of your lineup just becomes lethal, especially when you look at what you can do with your second and third lines after.
Do you think the Jays make a trade? And if so, who? The Jets lineup out of camp, what do you like there? Jonathan Jennings and the Lions and the Bombers. And, of course, anything and everything else that we've talked about, JC LaPon's contract. And are you concerned about Connor Hellebuck's arbitration hearing? Anything and everything next on The Big Show, TSN 1290, 780-1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290, proud to be a media sponsor of the upcoming 2017 Canada Summer Games in Winnipeg, July 28th to the 13th. 250 events, 16 sports, 50th anniversary of the Canada Summer Games will welcome over 20,000 visitors. At the end of today's program, we'll have a couple passes to give away, as we will each week, to different events going on with the Canada Games. And you can help paint the town red, yellow, and orange until this Friday, July the 21st, and of course after that. But if you do it prior to this Friday and wear your official 2017 Canada Summer Games clothing, take a picture of yourself and share the photo using the handle at 2017 Canada Games and the hashtag gear up for a chance to win a Via Rail promotional travel credit. Visit canadagames.ca/2017 for more information about Games Gear Fridays. Also, opening and closing ceremonies are set. Tickets available at ticketmaster.ca. And don't forget, from July 29th to August 12th at the Forks of Manitoba Liquor and Lotteries Canada Games Festival, 11 days, over 150 artists and fireworks every night. Visit canadagames.ca/2017 for the full festival lineup. Jim Tolth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki with you on The Big Show, TSN 1290 and the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. You can text us at 1290-90 as well, with standard message rates applying. To the Boston Pizza fan line we go. John, you're kicking us off today. How are you?
I'm well. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
I just wanted to call in and offer my take on Cap, on Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah.
All the love, warmth, and graces of God to that guy, because he does things that really matter to real people day in and day out, puts his wallet where his mouth is, makes a difference not only on a community level, but on a global level, travels, speaks, donates heavily to causes that he supports and believes in, and speaks openly and passionately about causes and things that he believes in. And I think that we just need more of that from professional athletes in general. But furthermore, I think that the attitude of the NFL towards Cap is indicative of a league that's out of touch and will not exist on its current trajectory in another 5, 10, 20 years, where owners and teams are more than willing to employ people who are convicted criminals, people of much less and sporadic character than Mr. Kaepernick, simply because they toe the line. And I would say that if you were an NBA player, he'd have had a contract a long time ago. It never would have been an issue. Baseball and hockey, maybe a little bit of a clunkier fit, but the guy probably won't play in the NFL again, and I think he knows that and realizes it, and is not going to let it stop him from doing his life's work. And all the power to him. Anybody who says otherwise is clown. Good morning, guys.
John, I couldn't agree with you more. I truly, honestly, highly respect Colin Kaepernick and the stance he's taken and everything he does. And there's so many things that, you know, the average fan doesn't hear about. Like his jersey sales, if they didn't go to number one this year, they were top five. And players get a take of that, eh? Players get a take of their own jersey sales under the NFL CBA. And he donated all of that to the cause as well, and the different causes he reaches out to. I don't know about the other sports. I totally agree with you on the hypocrisy of the National Football League not wanting to give this guy a contract, but willing to give ex-cons and everybody else of that nature another chance. However, it does bring up the question to me that if he was, I don't want to say Tom Brady, because Tom Brady's Tom Brady.
Tom Brady's white. Start there.
But if he's Aaron Rodgers, if he's
who's white?
Matt Ryan.
You can't say.
I'm talking talent-wise. If you want to bring color into it, fair enough, as
well,
it should
that's
be.
That's what it is.
Okay, but if he's talent-wise Aaron Rodgers, does he not get a contract because he's not white? I think he gets a contract if he's Aaron Rodgers' talent.
I think that's a great debate to be had. That's
well, why wouldn't he?
Well, why wouldn't he is the same. How are you kidding me? How is he not somewhere as a backup right now when you see some of the guys, how superior he is in what he brings to the table as a quarterback, for him not to have a contract at the very least as a backup right now? And hey, maybe there's, you know, there is information here that's not known. What is he asking for and all the rest of it, right? That comes into play, obviously. But from from the eye test. It's, I think it's a tremendous question. If a more productive black quarterback would have taken this stance, would they be in the same predicament? You can only wonder that. But I think what I was most disappointed in last year with this entire story and all that Kaepernick didn't stand for, but, you know, stood for, but in the kneeling thing was there ever a time that we never saw a white player join, right? It was always, there was a number of other black players around the NFL that joined in for periods of time or for the season. You saw the Seahawks would join arms, and the Seahawks seemed to be the most forward-thinking organization of this whole thing. But man, it would have been refreshing. And don't think it was just mere coincidence that not a single white player in the NFL, I know there was the ex-player who was in the military, made a statement with it, but there was not a single white player in the NFL that came out and said something publicly to support the mindset of Colin Kaepernick in this entire journey. And I thought that was really tragic.
Is that a fact? Because I thought there was, I know there wasn't white players that took a knee or didn't took a knee, but I thought there were some white players that came out and voiced their support. I thought I saw that even on his own team in San Francisco, there was two of them.
Well, I don't even to go and take a knee with him. Like, I just, it was just, there's a real black white issue, always has been. And, you know, me and a lot of, maybe I'm just dumb and naive, thinking that a lot of it had been worked through and that a step had been taken as human beings and society at whatever side of the border you're on. But apparently wickedly mistaken in that the underlying level of racism that still exists is still remarkably tragic.
I know the issue Colin Kaepernick is doing it for is a race issue, but is taking a knee not the reason, a big part? Like the whole anthem thing. I get his cause is race, is about race relations. I'm just wondering if the whole anthem thing is a bigger part of it right now.
Well, I mean, we don't have to get too political about this here, but he's taking a more liberal stance towards certain issues, and I think generally a lot of owners in the NFL are at the opposite mm-hmm. spectrum of that. And so when you start getting into that kind of gray area there, I mean, especially down south more so than maybe other places, that kind of, you know, both ends of the spectrum, people take that very seriously, and they will not stand for something along those lines. So I don't know if it's necessarily the anthem itself, although, you know, that's held in a different regard too, because a lot of Americans feel like the anthem represents the military and fighting for America, when, you know, it's, that's another debate in and of itself. But I think it's more so just kind of the political leanings of, I think, the owners, as opposed to what Kaepernick is kind of aiming for.
Like, I totally agree with you. I think regardless of what the cause is, there is an enormous part of the population that if you disrespect the flag for anything, it's a bigger issue than what you're actually trying to bring to in their mindset.
But it's also important to point out the individuals who take such remarkable offense to that and also push them in a certain direction as to who, what group that detail that group, and I can assure you that the vast majority of those that take a wild, blind hatred to that action probably voted for and still stand by one Mr. Donald Trump.
No, that's blanketing. That's too much of a. I have two American friends who are white and fully support what Colin Kaepernick's doing. Mm-hmm. They do not support the kneeling during the anthem or the flag.
But I'm not saying not supporting it. I'm saying that. Take a vile stance against it. Like, there's a debate to be had there about kneeling. I don't know that I would kneel. I'm not in his position, so I you know, there's, and people is interesting because people would say, hey, there's different ways to go about it, right? But yet people couldn't present other ideas about how to, He ended up on the cover of Time magazine. I'm not sure what else he could do in nonviolent protest to do such a thing. But I'm just my point is, JT, that certain people hate Colin Kaepernick because of what he did.
Oh, for sure.
Now, I don't think your friends, if you are of sound open-mindedness, you're not going to hate what he, you're going to have a conversation about it. Some people won't do that. And they're like that. There's a far too large group south of the border, especially, who take real, like, have an extreme opinion of what he did that fit into the category that I discussed.
Thanks for the call, John. We appreciate it. To the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Rick, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Hey guys, a long time fan, first time caller.
Hey, thanks. We appreciate you taking the time to call.
Right on. So I'd like to get back to a little Jets talk here. And,
of course.
A few weeks ago when the Golden Knights took Chris Thorburn, a lot of my friends in particular kind of laughed it off and was wondering what Vegas was doing. But my question is, maybe are we overseeing the value that Thorburn brought to the table? I know that there's a trend in the league to get younger, to get faster, but to not have at least one guy that'll answer the bell for your team, it's a little concerning, especially considering last year I felt we got bullied a lot of games. There was that one game against Colorado when they're, I can't remember the name of their defenseman, but he absolutely obliterated three of our players.
It was Zadorov, yeah.
Correct. And there was almost no repercussion on that. There was also a game in I think Anaheim was here in Winnipeg, and it was hard to watch how bad we were being bullied off the puck. And that was happening when we had Thorburn in the lineup. So I'm just a little concerned moving forward with a young team that doesn't really have a tough guy, for lack of a better term. Where do you see that being an issue for next year?
Well, it's something we discuss a lot. I still believe in and understand the role, but I think the player, and we sort of touched on it a little bit when you're talking about the Galchenyuks, the Gallaghers and the likes of that in the league. I think Adam Lowry can answer that bell, and I think that Dustin Byfuglien can answer that bell if need be. I just don't. I fully believe the need has diminished, but I still agree with you to the point where it is there. Sean Mathias can as well. I don't know if it's a full time role. Well, I don't think it's a full time role anymore, but I do agree that it is a role from somebody on the roster.
Or you don't have a pugilist, right? Like, Pelusa was that guy, and Thorburn was more of a wrestler, but he would dangle and drop him. For sure, but maybe it's team toughness you're talking about, as opposed to dropping him. Like, heaven forbid if Dustin drops him or Byfuglien drops him, right? And you've got like guys like Myers has in the past, Trouba has if necessary, Sherratt will if necessary, and you know Kopp has, Lowry you would think would. I don't know if he has had a fight or not, but certainly he's cut from the cloth and some of the things that he engages in, he would. And, of course, Wheeler. Like, you got guys that'll drop him, but overall team toughness, when you're talking about like a Wheeler who can get a little bit nasty, and then Mathias, Lowry, Kopp, Dano will rough it up, and then plenty on the D-line. I think that they've got enough team toughness as opposed to having a specific pugilist like what you're talking about. But an interesting point.
Yeah, Lowry's had 6 fights in 3 seasons, so, I mean, he can do it, right?
Yeah.
And he's big enough to handle
himself. And he's kind of crazy. Like, you get a feel, and some of the things we've heard that he said and will engage on the ice, you get the feel that he's kind of the crazy one, that you don't want to mess around with too much.
Which brings just the biggest smile to my face.
Absolutely.
But, I mean, you know, I think this team is still, are they the Anaheim Ducks when it comes to toughness or things like that? No, but that game in Pittsburgh... The Jets, how many guys did the Jets injure in that game? And the Penguins almost had no response to it. So I think they're more than capable. And when it comes to issues with the team, I think toughness and having a guy like a Thorburn or Peluso is way, way down on the list. You're just seeing a transformation of the team, you know, from the grinded out playoff team a few years ago to really elite skill level littered through their top 6.
I think Mason will drop him with anybody.
Do you think the team needs that? I mean, Ben Sherratt's still signed as well. And do you think the team needs a specific guy? Man. Oh, he's gone?
Yeah.
He's always gone. I never know when people are gone.
Yeah, I don't know how you don't know that.
I don't know. I got to figure things out. I got to be better. Speaking of getting better, I got to get better. Rick, thanks for the call. It's an interesting discussion. Norm, hang on the line, and anybody else who wants to weigh in, 780-1290 on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Boston Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290 on the Big Show with Jim, Troy, and Brandon. Bob, you're on the program. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Long time no talk to. Couple things. I'll weigh in on the Jays a little later, but the Jets, I don't know what they're going to do with their lines. What I'd like to see is that Rossovic and Kopp would be playing together with Connor. I think Patan, the only way I see, he's redundant. I mean, I just don't know where he's going to play unless you're not going to extend Little and you try and give him a shot at the second slot. He's just got nowhere to play. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't actually have him making the team out of camp. And it's not because I think he's bad. It's not because I know Brandon has him on the number one line. I don't know about him defending other number one lines, but I still believe in him. I still think he's got a chance to play for the Winnipeg Jets. But when I look at the contracts and I have him down lower than the top nine, I just sort of see him starting the season with the Moose, and then maybe joining the team as the year goes forward.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just a fill-in. Like I say, to me, the future key would be how the development of Jack Rossovic goes, because if you watched him when he was playing with his peers in the World Juniors, they had him doing the things that the Jets actually need right now, and just hopefully he'll develop. And that is, he was in all specialty situations. He was taking defensive draws. And that's important. I mean, if you look at the numbers you want to watch, because I got the Jets making the playoffs this year, no problem. And I got them in the top three in their division, no problem. And that's not just from a homer's perspective. It's from the last 20 games they played. And the numbers that you want to see improve is the penalty kill. You want to see the number 49.3 go up. And that, to me, is based on how well they do in the faceoff circles as well on those specialty teams. And I was hoping that something like some of these guys like Kopp and Tanev would be healthy and be able to play the penalty kill, because I think they're better than they are. As far as the Jays go, I'd unload the whole group, and I'd move Stroman and Donaldson to Houston. I wouldn't do it for Bregman. I mean, I'd do it for Kyle Tucker and Gurriel maybe, and toss in either Whitley or Farrell, one of those two guys, two pitchers. But Gurriel, if he could come here, the Jays have his brother, and that would be a good situation for the Jays. And I'd send Osuna to the Nationals for Robles or Garcia if I could, and Bautista wherever for a bag of hammers. It don't matter.
Interesting, Bob. We appreciate the thoughts. You guys' comments on that? Any of it?
I wonder how much difference there is in Roslovic and Patan.
Yeah.
I'd still like to see Roslovic get another year in the A, though, or at least a half season and see how he does there. Like, he's still really, really young. Really young. At least Patan's been in the pro game, whether it's in the A or the NHL, for at least two full years. I think maybe three. If Roslovic tears up the AHL and he's over a point a game, then, hey, yeah, all means, bring him up. But I don't think there's any need to rush it right now.
Yeah, and of course, my philosophy is this is based on what I saw, at the end of last year, like how these guys come into camp and how far they've come will dictate a lot of it. I think there's some opportunity for a lot of these players coming into camp. Steve, we'll get you to hang on the line, and Norm as well. We'll get to you when we come back, and anybody else on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Thanks for the call, Bob, on the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Our province is packed with shining stars in the world of sports, and every week TSN 1290 would like to showcase and reward these individuals who are making a big impact and difference in what they do. Nominate a Manitoban athlete, coach, or volunteer who's dedicated to making their sport matter. Every Friday on The Big Show, we'll showcase a Subway Sports Star of the Week and reward him or her with a $50 Subway gift card. Visit TSN1290.ca to nominate your sports star, and we could be featuring them very soon, including on this Friday's Big Show. Text 129090 to get in on the conversation. Standard message rates applying, or give us a call, 780-1290 in the Boston Pizza fan line. Steve, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Jim, last week you said to try Hungarian hooch for my bad cold.
And?
No liquor. I went to every liquor store in Winnipeg, and none of them had it, so I guess they're all sold out.
I might have a few if you need something.
Well, maybe Brendan can put me on hold.
You sound better, though.
Yeah, so maybe just the thought of it.
Maybe the threat of it.
The threat of it? Even better. Troy, is Troy there?
Yeah.
I don't know if you know the answer to this, or if you do know it, you're willing to answer it. We both are on the same page as far as the Bomber management. It's been a 180, that's clear. I'm not saying they're going to win the Cup this year, but the direction is just... You know, it's clearly headed in the right direction. Every decision that's made, or most of them, have been good. But, I forget how many, I guess it's 3 years ago now, or two, how many. We had a chance, by we, I mean the Bombers' management, had a chance to stay in the East. It was up to them. Have you heard what the rationale, logic, or whatever was why we declined that and chose to move back to the West?
It's my understanding it was a decision made by the board of directors trying to rekindle some of the, further entrenched rivalries with the West.
And especially with Saskatchewan, being the same division as them.
Oh. Now, I've been saying for years, ever since that was done, that I thought it was a mistake. Pro sports, you know, the attendance during their time in the East was fine and dandy, and there were some inherent rivalries already with Montreal over the last while with those struggles and Hamilton in the past. And to me, pro sports is all about competitive advantage. And when you're looking at trying to go win championships, there is no doubt whatsoever. Since I've been a kid, the vast majority of power in the CFL has laid within the Western Division. I think it was a catastrophic decision as well.
Really?
Absolutely. It's all about competitive advantage. The East, you have a way better... there's no argument to be made there. The only argument you can be made is about the... You know, we're in the West where we belong. I understand that sort of an understanding. But when you're talking about competitive advantage, there's no question as to which side you have a better one at.
Yeah, but doesn't it always shift? Like, well, remember Doug Flutie was in Toronto?
Those were a small number of years.
The only reason the East was competitive, kind of, you know, while I was growing up, was because Anthony Calvillo and the Alouettes. Mm-hmm. Other than that, there was basically nothing for a long stretch of time. I mean, Calgary's been good, it seems like, forever. Edmonton's always been fairly strong. And Saskatchewan, outside of the past couple of years, I mean, they've always been, like, I don't know why. And you're right in the sense of, like, hockey and stuff, where we're starting to see a shift back towards the East. But for whatever reason in the CFL, I don't know what it is, but that's always seemed to have been the case.
But when I grew up, the Stampeders were awful for a decade. Like when Alan Rickman owned
them,
they brought in Doug Flutie, they could. Like, I just think it shifts. I think if John Huffnagel gets let go or moves to moves out east and stuff, like I understand lately, but I don't know if it makes that much of a difference. Like, I don't know if in 20 years from now the shift isn't going to be all east, depending on who's working where and who the staff is.
Well, you let me know the last time the East has been home to two or three powerhouses in the CFL.
Well, Doug Flutie won back-to-back Grey Cups, didn't they?
Okay, well, that's one team. The Toronto Argos had a great team when Flutie was there. Montreal had a strong team when Cavillo was there. You tell me who the other teams in the East were. Hamilton has struggled for decades. Ottawa until they prove
Ottawa
to be something
folded.
Else. And like Toronto is outside of the Flutie years, and every once in a while a team will bounce up from the East. But by and large, there's no question whatsoever. The strength of the CFL from a football and record perspective has always weighed on the West division.
I just don't know if it – I think that over time, regardless of what sport or what we're talking about, it just shifts back and forth. And I know that they had a choice to, but I think when the CFL comes to you and asks you to do something, you know, especially when it's like, don't you like being in the same division as the Saskatchewan Roughriders?
Well, it's great to have the extra game, and for the years that it falls, that's your additional home game. That's fantastic. But the fact of the matter is that the stats go look at the attendance levels during those X number of years that the Bombers were last in the East. I don't think the attendance really has changed all that much.
Thanks for the call, Steve. Back to the Boss Pizza fan line. Norm, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you today?
Good, Norm. How are you?
Very good. A gorgeous Manitoba morning. I'll tell you, beautiful out here.
Awesome.
I was going to say two things about the Bombers. Andrew Harris, he's a great player, and he's a great leader. And if all the Bombers play with his heart, I think we're going to go to the Grey Cup this year, and who knows what can happen then. I'm pretty sure we'll win. And I got one more thing to say about the Jets. I just hope that the Jets, they give Kyle Connor a chance, because you know what? I look at the Winnipeg Jets, and I see so much of a Pittsburgh Penguin team here. We got Scheifele, he's like our Crosby. We got Laine, he's like our Malkin. And then if Kyle Connor comes in, he'll be like our Phil Kessel. You know, and look at what they've done. I think Kevin Cheveldayoff, he's just done a terrific job here. Now I just hope that everything else can fall in line for the Jets. And I'll hang up, guys.
Thanks very much, Norm. We appreciate it. On the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290.
Andrew Harris, I'm right there with you, man. Got a massive man crush on him from a Bomber, you know, to support the team. He's exactly what you want from a guy when you cross the lines, a guy who will give you every single ounce, every single cell in his body to perform at a high level. And the dude is also just, when you commented there on what he brings to the table and then went to the Jets, Andrew Harris is a pretty scary hockey player as well. Really good skater and loves playing the game.
Craig, we'll get you to hang on the line 1 second. Breaking news. Well, not breaking, but Kirk Cousins was on radio today and talked about his contract situation with the Washington Redskins and said, basically, I needed more time to assess the team when it comes to why I didn't sign the long-term contract. Wants to make sure they're a winner. But this is even more interesting to me. Julian Edelman's ex-teacher is sorry for advising the wide receiver to set more realistic career goals. This is a letter Julian Edelman has brought out from sent to him on June 14th of this year, so last month. Dear Jules, I'm not sure you'll remember me. I was your teacher for English 100 class at CSM in the spring of 2006. I've been wanting to write you for, what seems like 1,000 years to apologize for a flippant comment I made to you that semester. You may not even remember it, but I felt bad about it for years. You made some comment about going to the league, and I said something about setting realistic goals about how few people successfully enter the ranks of professional athlete, blah, blah, blah. I don't think it fazed you, frankly, but whenever I think back on it, I feel terrible. Not because you proved me wrong, but because I stupidly voiced an uneducated opinion that implied I had disdain for your passion for the game. I think it was early in the semester before I knew you, but how could I ever have doubted your tenacity and grit is beyond me. Again, I doubt you even thought about it twice, but even so, I'm sorry for wedging my foot so firmly in my mouth that day and advising you to set more realistic goals than making, quote-unquote, the league.
I think those types of statements, even at a young age, can help. You know, if you're in the mindset and that's all you got in your head that you're going to play pro sports or whatever it is that you love, be a musician at a high level, whatever it is, that's a little bit outside the box that just fuels such individuals. But the teacher certainly is right to have a real solid backup plan. And typically it relates to education just in case.
To be fair, when I was in junior high, I told every teacher I was going to the NBA. And when I was in high school, my guidance counselor told me to think factory and pension.
Seriously?
Yes.
That's horrible. I do remember our defensive coordinator in football after I got drafted by the Bombers, who is a big cowboy from Wyoming. I've told a few stories about him. I love the guy. His name is Mike Friedel. And after I got drafted by the Bombers, he walked in and the coaches are congratulating. He walks up to me, looks at me and says, you'll never make it. You don't take it seriously enough. And I just looked at him. I thought, F you, man, is what I thought. And he was bang on in college. Like, I was put way more of my effort in an academic sort. Like, I just didn't take it real serious, for sure. Maybe didn't even know how to, necessarily. But what he said to me was, like, that was great motivation. I probably thought about that, I don't know, 100 times in my first year as a Bomber. So sometimes, and he's the kind of guy who would use that with motivation, right? So it's a cool thing.
Yeah. It is interesting you hear all these stories, of course. That's good of the teacher to send that to Julian Edelman. Back to the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Craig, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning. On the likelihood of Blue Jays trading Stroman, I thought a almost ideal trading partner would still probably be the Cubs, because they still have young players, lots of depth, but what they're really missing out on is some youth in their pitching rotation. I think Lackey's probably on his way out with the Cubs, but Candelario is a minor league prospect for the Cubs who's a third baseman. He's never going to play in Chicago. I think he's probably undervalued compared with what even the prospects they were dealing with the White Sox were, but he ripped it up in spring training, but there's just no way he's going to play there. I know Blue Jays were talking about, it makes sense if Donaldson's on his way out, but I'm not sure where things are going to go with that. But I'll just leave it up to you to discuss, and have a good day.
It's a great point you bring up, Craig, about Candelario, I believe his name is, because with Chris Bryant there, it doesn't look... I'm wondering if they'd move him around in the infield to another position, but if we're going to talk about moving Josh Donaldson, there are some very good young third basemen out there, but I... You know, the Cubs, I don't, like... If you traded Josh Donaldson to the Cubs, where is he going to play then? With Chris Bryant at third, like... Josh Donaldson's very interesting to me. Very interesting, because I don't think he's as poor as his numbers are, and I think that he still has some good years left in him. What good numbers and how many years and what cost it's going to come to after next year is very interesting. And I think that if a team could have him under control next year before trading him, say, next year heading into free agency, I think you might get more for him now.
Is it too early to declare this year a failure, and that Shapiro should have taken more steps into the rebuild this offseason?
I don't think so, because I think he did what everybody would have done. Like, it's
just
not,
to see what happened with this group.
Like, it's like he offered Encarnacion more money than he got. Mm-hmm. He went out and got Kendrys Morales to fill that hole. He's not having a good year. Josh Donaldson's not having a good year. And nobody thought that Aaron Sanchez would be this injured. Nobody thought that Jay Happ would regress. And, you know, so, like, I compare it a lot to Kevin Cheveldayoff. Going into this season, if it doesn't work out and a coach gets fired, is it Kevin Cheveldayoff's fault that the players didn't do what... And I sort of look at that with Shapiro and them. Like, if anybody sat down and looked at a team with its core roster still intact that went to back-to-back playoffs, would you go... You need to fix this right now? I don't think so. I think he did what most people would do. Now, it's not working out, but I don't think, like, I don't think Josh Donaldson's injury plagued and poor numbers season is anything to do with Shapiro not, you know, blowing it up or doing anything like that. Do you guys?
I think that'll become more and more of a criticism. And I think wouldn't there be a number of people? I don't know. Lives is one of them, Matt Leibel, who thought Jay Happ was playing out of his mind.
And Estrada, too.
Yeah.
Both of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, they're I would have thought regression last year, but it didn't happen. So I guess when it's a couple years in a row, you expect more of the same. I mean, they lean on the vets, and the vets didn't come through.
Russell Martin?
Yeah. So I think...
Which makes it the way you evaluate managers and such, you make it becomes the wrong decision. Right?
Yeah, that's fair to say. And look, John, it's not like John Gibbons is helping matters either. He still has Bautista as the leadoff hitter. Like, you know, a decision that makes what, zero sense?
But if you're in the ALCS, are you sitting there going, well, these guys' regression come next one off season is there? Like, are you looking
savvy
at these guys
GMs,
going,
mate,
we're gonna actually fall, even with some regression, we're not a playoff team? We just went to back to back ALCSs.
A savvy GM might have.
Yeah, and plus you're talking about regression with Bautista. If you couldn't smell that, people were looking at that all day long, weren't they?
They didn't go out and get Bautista. Bautista had no other options. They just made him an offer, and then he went and explored it all, and they said, well, hey, we have a hole here, and if you want to play for this price, we'll bring you
back.
That's
kind of my point, though. Hanging on to an asset such as Bautista, if you hang on too long and all of a sudden he doesn't have options to land anywhere in free agency, aren't you missing out on something?
Well, it depends what other options you're talking about at that point. Like, when they signed him, what were the options at right field? Steve Pierce was going to play there a little bit. They were going to move him to one.
But, which still I think you could maybe look towards management for not having a better backup option or not being more aggressive to fill that hole earlier. I think the biggest mistake they made going into this season was, like we talked about, straddling both lines. Let's try and get a bit younger. We'll get a bit older too and contend, and then we'll kind of take stock halfway through the year. I think back in the summer, if they would have made that move and said, look, we can't get Edwin, I don't know about Bautista, let's go young, and let's start to sell some of these. Like, if they would have went one direction, I think people would be more okay with how the season would have gone, even if they did struggle to the extent that they have so far.
If you're asking me in the summer, if I'm looking at this roster, and do I expect the pitching to not be good, to be injury-filled, and for my core players to not put up what their career numbers have been, I wouldn't have said there's no way all three of those things happen.
That's why you're not a GM. Just joking.
I would say that, you know what? I think maybe my pitching could regress a bit. Or I think I'm not going to get the – I don't think I'm going to get 320 out of Donaldson, but I bet you I get 30 bombs and 290, 295. That's what I would say. And I would say Kendrys Morales is coming in here. We saw him in Kansas City. This is what I think he's going to do. I may be off a little bit. I don't think I would have sat down with that roster and said all these things are going to happen.
No, you don't. You never foresee injury things, but a lot of people picked them to miss the playoffs, right? So,
like, let's not forget, people had Aaron Sanchez winning the Cy Young. Literally winning the Cy Young this year, and he hasn't played.
Yeah.
Which is just a bunch of bad luck, sort of, right? So it's a bit of an epidemic with the league.
So when you're 8 games out of first in your division, and you don't have the what most thought was a Cy Young winner playing, isn't that 8 wins?
Aaron Sanchez isn't a part of the 14th out of 15th ranked offense in the AL, though.
Well, the one thing that I've never predicted, and I can't stand watching it, is the defense. The Jays are horrific defensively, and I can't stand watching it. It's awful. And I don't know how you fix that, but whether it's a team meeting, whether you read the Riot Act, or whether you start making some trades. But their team defense is horrific this year.
Which is something that went south in a hurry, right?
Yeah.
Real quick. Craig, we appreciate you waiting on the Boss Pizza fan line. Do we have time right now, or do we have to? Craig, we'll have to get you right after the break. I apologize. I was going on a rant. We'll get to you next on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
Back to the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290 on the Big Show with Jim, Troy, and Brandon. Rick, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Oh, Jim, congratulations on taking over from... I'm so thin Rick, who used to call Matt Leibel. Oh. Anyway, that don't hold that against me. Tell me, when we got this Steve Mason, were they hanging on trying to... Was he a price factor? What was his relation in Philadelphia? Was he a Neuwirth splitting the net?
I think, well, they were for a while, and I think they were just basically was back. Brandon would know more, but I think they were basically just going with the hot hand, weren't they?
Yeah, two years ago when they brought Neuwirth in, Mason was the clear-cut starter. And then last year, it was a little bit shaky, the relationship between the two, and as to who was number one and 1B sort of thing. But by the end of the year, Mason was... I think Mason started the last 15 or so games for the Flyers.
This is what Mason played the last 4 years, starting in 2013-14. 61 games, 51 games, 54 games, and last season he played 58 games. So basically the starter for 4 years there.
I think Neuer, if I'm not mistaken, used to be the star with Hershey Bears, who stuck it to the Moose.
Yes, versus Corey Schneider in the Calder Cup final.
Exactly. I'm going to the Goldeye game tonight. The team's in first place. They're in a hot streak, and I see last night they drew 3,100. I don't know what's going on in this city. If it's just Jets, then the Bombers, who slipped 5,000 from the last game, or is sports attendance sliding because of summer, or what do you think?
I think it's the summer. I think it's nice weather. But I was there on Saturday, and it was a beautiful evening, and there's nothing better than sitting at Shaw Park watching the Fish put up 12 runs, having a cold one.
Just one.
To me.
Just one?
At a time. Well, that's not true either. But anyways, couple.
Yeah.
Good stuff, Rick. We appreciate it. Thanks for the call.
There's nothing wrong with 25 at a Bombers game,
man.
Like
people
whiz.
Say that to me all the time,
yeah,
too.
Like ever since I was playing, that was a decent home crowd, for crying out loud.
On a weeknight, or on a weekend in the summer when people go to the cottage to get 25,000, like on a Thursday night to get 25,000 people at IGF, I don't think that's an issue.
It looked pretty packed to me. Well, I was there. I didn't think anything of it, really, to be honest.
There's nothing
with you.
Wrong with 25 at a Bomber game.
And especially when it's on TV. Like, to get 25,000 people to a game, I think, is great attendance. And I hope it continues. And I hope the Gold Eyes get tons of fans this summer,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, for sure.
Thanks for the call, Rick. Bobby, you're on the Boston Pizza fan line. Go ahead.
Hey, morning, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Morning. Thanks for calling.
Hey, I just wanted to talk about this really quick. I really appreciated your rant there, Jim, on the Jays. But I think that we're a little bit off base when we're talking about a team that just made the ALCS last year. 2 years in a row. The team is good. They're underperforming, but this is a good team. And I think Jose Bautista was the right move. If you look at his last 21 games, he has a 400 OBP since going into the leadoff position. There's something there with this team. The season's only just half over. I still think they've got a shot. So I'm not really sure why we're always talking about blowing up the team. And even if you wanted to, who are you going to trade? Besides Donaldson, who has any value that you would trade right now?
I agree with you. I think to look at what the team did in the offseason and to go, well, this is time to blow it up after going to the playoffs two straight years, I don't agree with that at all. I think the team is underperforming, but I do think there are some tradable pieces. I think teams would want J.A. Happ. I think they would love Marcus Stroman, Donaldson. You know, Russell Martin is a veteran that I'm sure some teams would love to get behind the plate going into the playoffs. I think there are some tradable pieces. However, the ones I just named personally, I think those are the guys you would be trading for to bring in and build a team around. So it's an interesting question. You guys?
I don't have much to say to that outside of there is a group of individuals who just still want to be patient here with the Blue Jays, and certainly with the number of games left and what, a handful of games outside of a wild card spot, you can understand that. Especially if you believe strongly they're underperforming.
This is a massive week because there's 2 weeks left in the trade, till the trade deadline, non-waivers. They're 8 games back. They play Boston 3 more times this week and then go to Cleveland.
Even if they pull off a sweep against Boston, for instance, then they're like what that does to them, putting them back in the mix.
Even if they win both series, like, and you're sitting 5 games back of the division and maybe 3 back of the wild card, it's a different week heading into the final week. We appreciate the time and the calls, Bobby, and everybody else who weighed in. We have some stuff to give away. 12th and 13th caller through 780-1290. One winner will get a pair of tickets to the 2017 Canada Summer Games, and the event is Athletics, July 31st at the U of M, if you'd like those tickets. And we also have a pair of tickets to WWE Live at Bell MTS Place, September 30th, 780-1290. We'll be back tomorrow morning with much more on The Big Show. Thanks for listening, and thanks for your participation. On behalf of Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki, and myself, Jim Toth, we'll see you tomorrow morning, or hear from us tomorrow morning on TSN 1290 at 6 a.m.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.